This is PFW in progress.
Hello, fellas. Everybody's here. Freddie, Tom, good to see you.
PFW in progress with Fred Kirsch.
I do you a favor and take Freddie in when they're having a bad time, and then you try to push me up. I gotta kick asses sometimes to make it run right. We had a little argument, Freddie and I, so I had to straighten him out. He was banging cocktail waitresses two at a time.
Paul Perillo.
Come over here, kid. Learn something. You start out with a little bit of oil. Then you fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste. You fry it. You make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil. You shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine.
Maybe I just drink to get drunk.
Cut the crap. I got more important things for you to do. How's Paulie?
Oh, Paulie won't see him no more.
And Andy. And Andy?
I can handle things. I'm smart. Not like everybody said. I'm dumb, I'm smart, and I want to spend.
Andy Hart.
I know it was you. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
Some guy named Tom.
Tom no longer comes to here. Gonna be our lawyer in Vegas. That's no reflection on Tom, but that's who I want.
Mike, why am I out?
You're not a wartime consigliere, Tom. Things may get rough with the move we're trying.
Maybe I could help.
You're out, Tom.
PFW in progress.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
Honestly, I thought my brothers were prank calling. Yeah, and it was Belichick and boys and Scott Pioli, and it was a great call. It really was. It was a call in which obviously kind of set me back and wondered what was I going to do. And obviously, I had to get together with the family members and come to an agreement. And this was our decision, so I'm going to go for it.
To see Junior reunite with him. And just see him come out of retirement, for a two-day retirement, I'm very excited. I know what Junior brings to the table. I know that he's a leader. I know that he's an energetic guy. He's a very unselfish player. And I know he can still play and make plays.
All right, that's Junior Seau, and we're PFW in progress here on a Wednesday. And, boy, guys, we got a lot to talk about. Everything from Junior Seau and Willie McGinnis. And Deion Branch, some new news regarding him. So there's just a lot of stuff to talk about here today. The email address is webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. And it's me, Fred Kirsch, Andy Hart, Tom Casale, Paul Perillo, Gary in the booth. And we're going to be here for the next 2 hours talking about all this stuff with you.
I am going to have to sadly say that I'm unprepared because I don't know of the new news with Deion Branch. So I'm a
little
worried
about
this.
Well, the news that came out by Steve Burton last night.
Well, there was actually no news.
I'm not aware of it.
It was just an interview.
Well, I'll just have to fill you in, Paul.
Well, I just want to state for the record I'm unprepared. I apologize.
I'm shocked. I think because usually you're all over those media sites. And the stuff was
not all over
the
media sites, particularly not anything that Steve Burton.
Actually, he kind of porked himself today prepping for another topic.
You're always on it just to see if they're talking about you, right?
Because I'm really worried about what Steve Burton thinks.
No, I mean the media sites. I'm talking about the media sites.
The Boston Sports Media Watch. I'd usually go on that every day.
It was on there.
I didn't get to that today.
Okay.
He really was prepping for another topic. He was doing a lot of research, actually.
Is that right?
We'll talk about it later in the show, but just to defend him a little bit.
Okay.
He wasn't doing his normal, you know, dieharddogs.com.
A lot of stuff to talk
about. Which, by the way, you can check that out at dieharddogs.com. You know, that's the official fan website of the Northeastern Huskies.
And after they lose 85
and
off of Virginia Tech, you can also check
them out on
DaveDudek.com.
Prepping for the biggest game in school history.
It's not the biggest game in school.
Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. We already have tons of email coming in, and it's heartening. It really is to see the kind of support we're getting.
It's the only place you can talk about the Patriots. Everyone else is talking about those loser Red Sox.
It's true. It's unbelievable.
I like that Andy got taken to task because he said now that the Red Sox season is over, and an SPFW wrote in ripping him, saying the season's not over.
Now I want the Red Sox to come back because, you know, you get all the people on the radio just saying how it's over, and we knew they should have traded guys and made a move and all this stuff, and everyone's backtracking now. So now I hope they come back. And screw the Sox. Some football. You know,
so they overshadow the Patriots for even longer?
No.
I'm not sure Mr. Kraft would be on board with that little plan.
They don't overshadow the Patriots. All right. Web radio.
Well, seven games in a row.
Faith and democracy.
You know, let's talk about Junior Seau. Junior Seau was signed, was it Friday last week?
Yeah.
That is correct.
And you know, as we know, he retired. Retirement lasted about 4 days.
Mm-hmm. And wrestling-like retirement.
And he got a call from the Patriots and said, hey, look, we need help. And obviously, let's not, you know, skirt around that issue.
They need help.
Yeah. You know, this is a move of desperation, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Y'all agree on that?
Yeah, I would agree.
Yes, and fans don't want to hear the word desperation, but it's desperate times around here at the linebacker position. Especially if Bruschi's injured longer than
Teddy's hurt.
Expect.
Beisel just keeps dropping.
Mm-hmm. Beisel's
like a stone.
Beisel is, however, he is back. He was on the practice field yesterday. He was in the locker room today. Fielded questions.
Well, so even when he was back, he was still not. Yeah,
that only makes the team worse.
Well, obviously he wasn't.
All you did today, Monty, by returning, was make the team worse.
Yep, that's all he did by returning.
I actually think he has a fair. And I went in as optimistic as anybody. I went into camp about Monty Beisel. I actually think that he has a fair chance of not even being on this.
I agree.
So that being the case, they tried Don Davis and Barry Gardner inside, and the move of Rabel coming back inside means neither one of them are really doing the job that they expect.
I would agree.
And bringing in Sale. So there's a really good chance we're going to see Vrabel and Sale as you're starting inside
with
linebackers.
Banna Kane on the outside.
Especially
with Banna Kane, you know, Bill Belichick's new favorite player.
If Bruschi's not ready for the opener, which, you know, right now I think it's a possibility that he's not ready.
Right.
I think you're going to see Vrabel and Sale. And, you know, just you mentioned Barry Gardner, Fred. Andy actually did a thing, you know, you talk about the media. At least I just keep it local. Andy's big national.
Do we need to tell the whole story?
He was in Philadelphia.
That they called
last
Paul
night.
Perillo first, and you blew him off and never called him back. You just waited until they called me.
I didn't blow them off.
Say this.
I don't. Andy was on a station in Philadelphia last night.
Okay.
Go ahead, Andy.
I was on there with them talking Patriots. They were going around the league or something. First of all, they kept me on for 27 minutes, which I don't.
Did you get paid for this?
No, which I don't appreciate. Well, if you're gonna have me on for a freebie, that's like 6 minutes, and I'm out.
You gotta tell them up here. I got 10 minutes, guys.
Okay. Anyway, we
you
talked.
Pretend you're important, even though you're not.
Okay. Thanks, Fred.
Remember Brian used to do that. Hey, Lee, I'll call you back.
Well, if we're going to use that as an example.
It's like you get a radio gig.
He pretended he was important.
It's like those business cards I'm carrying around. No one really cares about them, but I carry them around anyway.
But anyway, I was on with them, and we were talking, obviously, Junior Seau and linebacker and everything, and I said, you know, kind of a desperate situation. They had Davis and Gardner playing, and the guy cut me off and goes, whoa, you had Barry Gardner playing. We know a little something about Barry Gardner down here, and if he's on the field, they definitely have reached desperate times.
Wow.
So they're not big fans of
him.
Well,
he hasn't played a lot since 2000.
And the only place he's ever really played was Philadelphia.
Right,
so.
Right.
And they have a long memory.
You know, I don't know who those guys were and, you know, how respected their opinions are, but that's not good. That's not good that they remember Barry Gardner, and it wasn't fondly.
Yeah, so that's the issue.
And let's be honest. Junior Seau is not nearly the player he once was, but he could probably roll out of bed at 65 and be better than Beisel and Gardner.
Right.
I mean, seriously, what they have right now, you can't lose if you're the Patriots. If he gets injured, which he might because he's 37 years old, he gets injured.
Right.
But you're not really taking a chance. You're not giving them $100 million to come.
Right. If he gets injured, you pay your $900,000 or whatever it is, and you took a shot. But there's no question, whatever he contributes, whether it's one game, 5 games, 10 games. Is better than what your alternative was. Okay.
So let's
because
so
he didn't have.
I'm sure we're going to get some emails on Seau, but now I want to get into this whole Willie McGinnis thing. Apparently, you know, of course,
and you don't like. Let's clarify. You don't like him anymore because he's not on the Patriots.
So let's clarify. When you meet him in the tunnel at Brown Stadium,
and let me say this. You know, usually I admit that I come to things from a Patriots perspective and a fan's perspective and a loyalist. Perspective, but I was watching a show which I never watch. I don't think I've ever watched the show before, but for some reason I was home yesterday because I had to pick up my car, Tom, which you were nice enough to give me a ride to get my car from the shop.
How's the backseat of Tom's car?
I was home. It's funny having this conversation. I'm like talking to my driver because I had to sit in the backseat of Tom's car because his door doesn't open. So he said you can either crawl through the window.
When you have a Hyundai with 110,000 miles on it, you're not going to take the front door off.
Anyway, I was home and I turned on ESPN and that show Around the Horn was on.
Yes, bad show.
And every one of those national type guys all said that Willie McGinnis sounds like an idiot.
I agree with that.
So let's go over what happened. The Patriots called McGinnis because.
Right.
Seau wanted to wear his 55, which he's worn throughout his career at USC, which then was handed down to Willie McGinnis at USC, and Willie McGinnis wore it here. They asked him if it would be okay. Seau, I guess, talked to Willie McGinnis. Willie McGinnis said it was okay, but then turns around and tells the AP that he had a problem with it. And, Gary, do we have that bite? Let's play that.
At the end of the day, Junior started the legacy with the number 55 at SC. He handed it down to me, and he went on to do great things with it in San Diego. And, you know, I took it to New England and did what, you know, I did my thing with it. If I'm one of those guys that embodied everything they said what the organization meant, and I worked hard and I helped them win championships and things like that, I think they should have stepped forward. It is what it is. It's not something I didn't expect when they said they were signing Junior, so I always expected they would do something like that, but I think they should have really stepped up and not put Belichick or Junior in that situation.
You're a loser!
So basically he's saying that Robert Kraft, because he's absolving Junior Seau and Belichick,
right,
should have said, no, you can't use 55. Okay,
thank
did
you,
anyone
Robert.
Else help win those Super Bowls?
I don't know.
Yeah, so all those
not.
Numbers we
unless,
can't use
unless,
now?
Unless McGinnis wore number 12, I don't really care what he has to say.
I mean, is he the only one that helped them win these Super Bowls?
Well, plus, apparently. I think that it's the perfect situation to just let it happen because it's Seau, and you followed Seau at USC. You know Junior Seau is not going to play more than a year here, maybe two if everything was perfect. So it's not like he's going to tarnish your legacy by becoming the 55. Willie McGinnis was here for whatever it was, 12 years. And he's the 55 of this era. No one, that's not going to change anything with 1 year from Junior Seau. So I think it was the perfect situation. Keep your mouth shut. And the quote to me, that if I'm Willie McGinnis, I say, you know, I followed him at USC. It's kind of funny how it comes full circle now. And, you know, he's going to wear it for a year or two in New England. You know, he's always going to be 55 with the Chargers. And I think I'll always be 55 with the Patriots.
And you know, I don't even know if Robert Kraft knew that they were calling Willie McGinnis. I don't think he's in on that.
No.
You know?
And you know what, though? I loved when he was here how all the Patriot fans thought he was such a great guy. And now that he's leaving, his actual personality is coming out. Because as far as I'm concerned, my first year here, if you told me to rank all the people in the locker room as far as nice guys to bad guys, he'd come in last.
Well, I mean, if you ask Brian Morey, he never... You know, he always had problems with Willie McGinnis.
Yeah, and as almost everybody does. I mean, I have nothing really positive to say about him, you know, off the field. I know he's
if
done...
If Paul's saying it, then I know that it's not just the fans' perspective.
Why? I don't...
You know, because you like to make fun of the fans who kick people on the way out the door, but you don't do that.
No, I am not kicking him on the way out the door. I didn't think that he was ever as good a
player. In other words, making fun of Fred.
Right.
Exactly.
I never thought he was as good a player as he was giving credit for on the field, and I certainly, even magnified, never thought he was nearly the locker room presence that he was giving credit for. I made that comment, you know, we'll get back to making fun of me for my media appearances. I made that comment one night on the Fox show with Gary and Greg. You wouldn't believe the amount of emails that I got about, you know, and Tom was pointing out all these people on message boards that were killing me because I said Richard Seymour is much more of a leader than Willie McGinnis ever will be. I got killed for it. Now I'd like to see what people, you know, and this was obviously when McGinnis was still a Patriot.
Right.
So Patriot Nation was all up in arms and they were killing me for it, but that's how I felt then. I don't think you're a leader by being a moody, brooding, you know, sulker in the corner of
that's
the locker room. I don't think that's a leader. You know, and Tom Brady is a classy, classy guy, and he made some comments after McGinnis got released, and he said, you know, how much of a good leader he was. But even the way he explained it to me is not what my opinion or definition of a leader would be. You know, Willie's a scary guy. You know, he was an intimidating presence, and if you weren't doing your job, Willie made you accountable. I don't think that's a leader.
I don't think
you just sit in the corner and intimidate everybody.
Well,
I don't think that's what a leader. I think that's what Bruce Armstrong did.
Well,
and I don't think that he was a great leader either.
Right.
You know, at the time, there was a time that I thought he was, but then I came to realize I was wrong.
But would have been a great leader on a team like this, a 3-time Super Bowl champion, where there were different kinds of leaders. Is there a place for that?
And I'm sure that's why he succeeded. But I just don't think that he was as good a leader as Rodney Harrison or Brady or Seymour. I think those guys did much more to help lead his team to the greatness it achieved. And I'm not just talking about physically, because I mean, obviously everybody does their part on the field.
Right.
Well, and what you know kind of even makes these latest round of comments by McGinnis worse is they follow the first round,
right,
which is kind of knocking the Patriots organization for, you know, bringing in these mid-level guys, saying that, you know, you can say all you want about the system, but at the end of the day you need players, which, you know, you can't argue with,
yeah,
but it's meant as a shot. at the organization for being cheap. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the bottom line.
And really shot at Dwayne Starks. I mean, I know you could say all we want about how bad Dwayne Starks was last year, and he was. But, I mean, is it really necessary to take that shot, a personal shot at another player, a fellow player? Well, that he did that to me. That's classless.
And that's not a sign of a leader,
right?
Keep that
exactly.
In the locker room. Player leader never ever does that.
Keep that in the locker.
That's
room.
Inside the locker room, you know. And you know, Paul, I know you agree because we've talked about this. But my God, if there's anyone that the Belichick defensive system has helped revive a career, it's Willie McGinnis. I mean, he was floundering under Pete Carroll when Pete Carroll gave him the latitude to be this elephant that he called the position, where you kind of have him move all over the place and kind of attack weaknesses of the other team. Well, he attacked nothing while he was here with Pete Carroll, and really his career was revived by the Belichick.
I think the biggest achievement that the biggest boost to McGinnis' career from Belichick was he could never stay healthy, and Belichick recognized this, and he really altered McGinnis' whole off-season program right through camp. Where we saw there was camps that he didn't even participate in the practice. And he was involved in none of the, you know, he'd be out there every day with that long sleeve white shirt underneath his blue 55, but he wouldn't participate in any of the public practices at camp. And that was to monitor him, you know, especially as he, you know, started getting up there in years. But he had some productive years with Carroll. I mean, he had like 11 sacks one year in that elephant position that you're talking about, but he could never stay on the field,
yep.
And he was considered one of those guys that was kind of a malingerer and you know, didn't really, you know, have the drive or the passion. You know, Belichick kind of recognized the fact that if we can get this guy on the field and keep him on the field, I can make him productive.
So, rightly so.
You mentioned him doing nothing. When they were playing the Broncos last year and the Colts, when Dwayne Starks was getting burnt, what was Willie McGinnis doing? Because is it his job?
He was yelling. He was yelling at special teams fill-ins, yeah, on the goal line.
Because maybe if Jake Plummer didn't have 10 minutes to roll out to one side of the field and throw back to the other, and I'm not defending Dwayne Starks. Obviously, he didn't play well, but I'm just saying it's not like McGinnis was putting pressure on the quarterback all day long, and Starks was getting beat. So he has to take some of the blame of that too. Because as Bill always says, it's team defense. It's not one person making it great or bad.
So, you know, McGinnis goes out of his way to protect Belichick from the criticism of the whole sayout thing. Obviously, he's got sour grapes that the team, you know, God forbid, let him, you know, not re-sign him and give him money. So,
mm-hmm. And for a practical matter, with this whole number thing, what were the Patriots going to do?
Yeah.
What number? You give me a suggestion.
Say out. We should wear, you know, 59.
There were no other numbers in the 50s that were available.
You know, I know.
I think Rosie would take a payoff.
I'm sure Rosie would take a payoff. But
yeah,
I mean, there was no other number available in the 50s.
Six pack of water.
And there were no numbers in the 90s.
Right.
So you're talking about him having to wear a number that he would only have temporarily,
right,
to start with. And this Junior Seau, I mean, I've been as big a critic of Junior Seau's career, but even I can admit the guy's been to 12 Pro Bowls. He's going to the Hall of Fame, okay? Whether I think he's overrated or not is irrevelant to this discussion. The guy was career dwarfs McGinnis.
You think he's overrated because of what people think of him, much like my Roy Williams thing. People think Roy Williams is like one of the best defensive players in football. I just don't agree with that. You think he's overrated because the way people portrayed him in his prime is like this unstoppable force, and he got to some of those Pro Bowls based on purely his name.
Yeah, I just don't think
you're not saying he's a bad football player.
Right. No, I just don't think he's a great football player, and certainly
there's no way he had 12 straight Pro Bowl worthy seasons.
No, none.
Right. And you know, I mean, that's just my opinion, and I don't have anything to base it on. I'm certainly not a football scout or anything. I just, when I did get a chance to watch him play, I see him, you know, over-pursuing and getting himself out of position as often as I see him making these plays that we see on ESPN, you know, in the backfield. I see him constantly jumping offside, constantly, you know, getting so over-hyped. And you know, look, I don't want to kill the
well,
guy.
Well, I mean, the guy's
I just don't think he's
plays.
I don't
no
think he's that
it.
Good. That's all.
He's... Well,
but the question is, from McGinnis' point of view, does it matter that it's Junior Seau? I think that's the point McGinnis is saying.
Absolutely.
He's saying, because of what I did, it shouldn't matter that it's Junior Seau. You know what I'm saying?
Well, then why, you know...
That's his point. As a way to respect what I did for a dozen years for you.
What do you do? Every time, you know, somebody a long time, you know, when Brewski leaves...
No, let's be fair. Willie McGinnis doesn't leave every year. I
no.
mean, a 12-year
no, but
player.
Like, Fred brought this up yesterday.
Career, you know, 79 sacks, whatever it is. And he has some legitimate numbers and credentials to back up his side of the argument.
But, you know, and Fred brought this up yesterday to me off the air. And you know,
So if a number 12 comes in here as a, you know, if Doug Flutie signs with the Patriots, a guy like that, somebody who has a resume and wears number 12, we just say, well, you know, I mean,
what
are we not going to give him a number?
When you're talking about Tom Brady, you're in a different category.
Plus, it's a little different. It's a little different with that. With quarterback and those numbers, there's a lot more numbers available.
I would
let's just say, would you get four? So Brady's the only untouchable number. Everybody else, you're fair game.
Right now.
See, I don't think anyone, you know, and I just think it's different. First of all, there are a lot of other numbers that are available.
So why didn't they give out 55 base of the before this?
But they didn't. They haven't even given out 11.
12 years.
No, why didn't they give it out to Jeremy Mincy or?
Maybe they didn't think. Maybe they do have some respect for the number that they're not going to give it to a Jeremy
They tried to
Mincy.
Keep it open for a year, but they couldn't.
When you get a guy like Junior Seau, you give him the number.
They didn't keep 24 open for a year.
Right.
And that's, you know, Fred brought that up yesterday, and, you know, and I made the comment that, well, I think that was a little bit more personal.
I was going to say, called the coach a liar at one point.
And you want to talk about career. I mean, Ty Law's career, in my opinion, dwarfs Willie McGinnis as well.
And then I'd also like
Far
to know
player.
How this works technically, because I don't think that the powers that be are always involved. I think the equipment manager makes some of these decisions on his own.
But we
and I'd like to know when it crosses a line where a head coach is involved or when an owner is involved.
I think when a player requests a number, then it's out of the equipment manager's hands. Then it has to go beyond him.
Well, we asked Gostkowski at rookie minicamp. You know, he was number 3, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, was he given the option of wearing 4 or whatever? You know, did he have any desire to wear 4? And he said no. That when he got here, the equipment manager told him he could choose between 3 and 5, and he chose 3. Now, I don't know if that's the case for every rookie. Maybe the equipment manager, whereas a veteran that comes in might say, well, you know, I've worn, you know, Rodney Harrison. I've worn 37 all my life. Is 37 available? Can I wear that? I don't know.
But going back to your point, though, he's Steven Gostkowski. We're talking about Junior Seau. And, you know, some respect. You have to give the guy some respect. If he wants to wear his number, he wears his number.
Well, if they signed Jason Elam in the offseason and Jason Elam wore 4. Now, I realize he doesn't.
Right.
But if he wore 4, would no one would have a problem if they gave him 4?
I wouldn't, personally, if you're talking about an established veteran like that. I just think when you're talking about Brady, it's like Peyton Manning. I think both guys are going to the Hall of Fame. You'll probably never run across another Tom Brady in the history of your franchise. That number's special. Other than that, give him out. That's what I say.
You know, football is less about numbers and more about the guy's name.
Well, because of the ridiculous, we'll get back to the ridiculous rules, Fred, that restrict you from wearing certain numbers at different positions. You don't have anything available.
That's what you have to do.
You're right. Because football has their rules in place, there's not enough numbers.
Couple emails chiming in about this. We'll skip over. We're going to try to get to everybody's, but these came in right on this point. Dan at Fairfax. Want to chime in on the Willie McGinnis Jr. Seau 55 controversy. I have nothing but love for Willie, even though he isn't on the team anymore, but I think he's wrong on this one. He's basically declaring his number is retired on his own. I figure it isn't retired until the team retires it. You can't make that decision for them. It isn't like Jerry Rice asking to use Steve Largent's number after it was retired. I'm fine with Seau wearing the jersey if it isn't retired.
That's a good point, though. It is kind of like he's retiring his number on his own. Well, no one can touch 55 in New England.
And you know what? I don't think it's ever going to get retired. I don't think it should.
Another email. Isn't Junior Seau about the same age as Willie with about the same NFL experience? I think Junior has about 5 more Pro Bowls than Willie in their respective careers. Willie, shut up.
He has about 12 more Pro Bowls than Willie.
How many has McGinnis made?
I think he made 1.
He's 17th option.
And Seau is a lot more experienced. This is his 17th season. This is only McGinnis' 13th. McGinnis actually took Seau's 55. It's, you know, kind of the perfect circle. Mm-hmm. You know, right. He took 55 at USC after Seau left USC.
Well, they had like a ceremony or something, didn't they?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people use that as a you know, kind of a barometer in this. That's completely irrelovant. Colleges do that intentionally.
Yeah, right.
They have legacy
numbers. It's a recruiting tool.
Absolutely.
Right. No
I mean, you know, the number 44 at Syracuse is one of the most legendary numbers with you know, Jim Brown and Floyd Little. And, you know, they had
45 Ohio State.
Is Ernie Davis, yeah. I believe, as well.
Archie Griffin.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that number 5 at USC isn't just going to be given out to anybody anymore.
Well, you're not going to have some, you know, end-of-the-line, fourth-string gunner on the punt team wearing 5.
Again, as I started this conversation off, I knew I wasn't being my usual just Patriots
flag-waving self when I heard all these guys on TV agree with this, that it just sounds like sour grapes on Willie's part.
And it especially compounds it when he had those comments earlier. He's clearly still a little sore about the whole situation.
Yeah, and obviously he's blaming the ownership. You know, and or Scott Pioli.
That I don't get. I think if he wants to channel his anger, I think it should be channeled at Bill Belichick. He's the head of the football operation.
And that's the one guy. I mean, we can talk about Vinatieri. They could have tried, you know, to get him. They could talk about Gibbons. They could have wrapped. This is the one guy I just think they didn't even care.
Well, they didn't want.
You know, goodbye. Thanks a lot.
And I have no problem with that.
Yep.
I mean, you know, Bill Belichick will never come out unless Michael Holly writes another book.
And he won't.
But there'll still be no information in it.
Well, I thought that the stuff that came out about Lawyer Malloy was pretty interesting.
Well, you love Malloy, of course.
What did you learn in that book that wasn't written?
What do you mean that wasn't written?
What did you learn in that book about Lawyer Malloy that wasn't in newspaper stories?
About Belichick's feeling toward his play?
Yeah.
He said he played like S.H., you know.
You didn't read that in the Herald?
I've never read that anywhere else.
But not the, you know.
Sugar Honey Iced Tea?
The S.H., you know, you know.
Sugar Honey Iced Tea?
There's no swears in the Herald, but, I mean, I read it once, I read it 4,000 times, that the last year the Lawyer Malloy played here, he had no big plays.
Wait a
no
minute.
Interceptions.
Oh, yeah,
no,
the media's written
no
that.
No fumble.
But I have
and
never
that,
written
and that.
I have
and
never.
And those media stories came from a place, Fred.
Yeah, I've never read anywhere where Belichick has said anything really like that about a player, other than an opponent wide receiver from
the
Philadelphia.
The difference for me is I know where the stories come from when they're in the paper, and evidently you don't.
Paul knows all the sources.
Okay.
Paul knows all. That's just the bottom line.
Well, you know, you talk to all these guys, you're on all these shows, so maybe you're
I'm just
right.
telling
I
you, when I read a story and it has that kind of,
Quincy
you
Morgan,
know,
the white receiver.
Completely
okay.
anti-approach, I know where it came from.
This is a good segue. Okay, I'm just asking because I don't know the answer.
And besides the fact, even if we were to believe, you know, we'll give you a point. Okay, Lawyer Malloy, there's a 300-page book that had two facts in it.
Okay. Anyway,
that people didn't
know. Curtis Martin, the Jets, hurt. There's a report out that his salary now has been reduced to the veteran maximum. Or minimum, I should say, but it's like $875,000. Veteran maximum, the veteran minimum, which is $875,000 or something like that.
What's the cap? $104 million.
And
how do you get reduced?
And
to the maximum?
There's further information that if he gets put on IR by the Jets, that can be cut in half, so he can earn $400 and some odd. Now, if the Patriots had done that to a player, would you complain of Curtis Martin's stature?
Done? I don't understand. Done what?
You know.
But didn't
reduce
they
salary
but
like did, that?
Didn't they talk with Martin though?
I don't know.
I think
I don't
he
know.
Has to agree to it.
Yeah,
exactly.
I
don't understand
was,
what you're saying
about him agreeing.
This just goes to show what kind of guy Curtis Martin is and always will be in this.
Well,
league.
I don't think he's happy about it.
Well, I'm just saying
he could have said no,
yeah, but he did. I mean, the Patriots.
He didn't put up a stink.
Times.
He didn't go to the New York media crying. He
exactly.
just said, you know what, you guys are trying to rebuild this football
That's
team.
True.
I'll do what I can, even though I can't get on the field. That's
and
the kind of guy.
And if
he
didn't accept it, they probably would have had to cut him outright, and the Jets would have probably been criticized. Just like the Patriots have been criticized for having to cut guys.
Knowing some of the people around
right.
here, that if this was a player on the Patriots, they'd be complaining. Oh, see, there's the Patriots again.
But I think
cheap.
The Jets will be doing plenty of things in the future where
I
you can
understand.
Say that because I think he is really trying to put the exact same blueprint in there. So in a year or two, there's probably going to be plenty of examples where we can point to and say that's pretty similar to
right.
what the Patriots would do.
Well,
did you see their depth chart? The
alphabetical order.
Tremendous. I saw the flip card. I love it.
I mean, on one hand,
Jonathan Vilma, fourth string linebacker.
I can see Mangini saying, hey, it's preseason. Everybody's you know, fighting for a job so we don't feel comfortable putting out a depth chart. I can understand that, but like Paul was saying, when you put these things out, they're unofficial. I mean, it's just,
plus
you know,
it's stupid.
That's
because
stupid.
Not every job is up
lazy.
For grabs.
That's
just
stupid.
Lazy.
You want to do, okay, right tackle. We don't
Probably
have a starting right tackle.
To do it.
Yeah. You're telling me Jonathan Vilma's not going to start for that team? I mean, there's some jobs
just
that are already
just stupid.
Theirs.
Well, I just think it's embarrassing that the media is so upset about it because they just had training camp. You were at,
right.
you know, 20 days in a row of practice. You can't formulate a depth chart in your head?
Right. Go to Yahoo.
I'm not saying that you're going to have all 22 starters completely nailed, but don't tell me there's any less than 18 or 19 that you don't get right. I mean, what do we have up in the air right now for the Patriots? And the Patriots don't put out official depth charts, by the way. But how do we come up with them? Because we watch practice.
We do it ourselves.
I don't think there's any.
You know, I mean, well, how many are up in the? I mean, I suppose you could say
that aren't injury related.
Hawkins and Wilson at safety.
Well, yeah, depending on whether or not Rodney is ready. Depending on whether or not Brusky is ready.
Just gave you the linebackers. If Brusky's not ready, I think we pretty much have the whole thing.
I mean,
down.
If Brusky's ready to go, it's probably going to be Vrabel and Colvin on the outside, Brusky and Seau on the inside. If Harrison's ready to go, he starts probably with Wilson. I would say there's a possibility that he starts with Hawkins and they continue to use Wilson in this three corner back rotation. I mean, anybody have any doubt it's going to be Warren, Wilfork, and Seymour up front?
Right.
I mean,
I don't know. I haven't seen a lot out of Richard in training camp, so I'm still holding that one out.
I just don't understand how hard it is to watch practice as a football writer.
A lot
and figure
of whining
out
going on.
A lot of whining.
I would say there's one question mark: O'Callaghan or Kazier.
Sure.
That's probably the only position.
I'd make a guess and say it's O'Callaghan.
I criticize Albert Breer from time to time, but I thought that question, and Bill didn't really have any idea what he was talking about. But
and I did, so I thought Albert worded it fine.
I thought he worded it fine, and I thought it was a good question. Mm-hmm. I mean, at this time of year, is it difficult to kind of, because normally a football coach is going to, I can't be concerned with the guy coming back after missing 20 days, because I've had a guy out there who's played. In this case, O'Callaghan has been the right tackle for the last couple of weeks. Now Cash is ready. How do you weigh it? Getting him back those reps and getting him ready to play in the preseason and not reward the guy who's been out there. I think at this time of year, that might be.
And you can't even say, you know, a lot of people in the philosophy, you never lose your job because of injury.
No one has.
Well, Kazier never really had the right tackle.
And no one has that philosophy.
But I just think it's a bottom line where, in Bill Belichick's mind, he has an inkling, or Dante Scarnecchia's mind, he has an inkling who's better. And
right.
To me, that's what is the end ball.
But and I'm sure that
if he thinks
Kazier's
getting some first-team reps. If he thinks O'Callaghan's better, then he doesn't give up those reps quite so easily.
That's a good point. And I probably would assume that Kazier, they think Kazier is better, but it's a matter of how long is it going to take Kazier to get back to the point where he's better.
Plus, I mean, even if Callahan's only equal to Kazier, Kazier's your perfect swing guy now.
Well, I was going to say,
he has experience at both sides.
Right. So he's your utility infielder. You know,
why Brandon Gorn is no longer here.
Right.
Watching the tape this morning, just one play I happened upon, Bertram Berry bitch-slapping Matt Light out of the way for a sack.
Oh, he killed him.
That was embarrassing.
I saw that play.
So, maybe there's some time at left tackle to be won.
Well, you know, again, we brought up Kazier's name. Yesterday was the first day he was back at practice, or he was taken off the PUP list yesterday. So that's good news, encouraging news. It adds to the depth. They got rid of Brandon Gorn. They traded him.
Traded him to Arizona
and
for
anybody
an undisclosed
in
Ari- draft.
Anybody pick. In Arizona who's looking to get Gorn a gift, get him a big towel.
But Paul, how was the traffic?
It's interesting.
Hi, so he can hold it over his shoulder while he walks the shower naked through everybody?
But it is interesting. It's funny and ironic and whatever that we were sitting at the game against the Cardinals, and one of the things you guys were saying is, my God, our defensive line's dominating.
Oh, domination.
So it just makes sense that right after that they make this thing for Gorn.
76 in a red and white Cardinal? No difference.
Our Brandon Gorn goes up against our defensive line every day in practice. And where he may not be that good, he's better than anything I saw on your line.
just for you fantasy folks out there, I would expect the edge to limp off with a quote-unquote hamstring injury about week 4 and be done with the season. Because he's got no chance behind that line. No chance.
Bleep this crap.
It's funny,
I'm going
because
home.
I've seen Denny Green on NFL Network and on ESPN last night. And ESPN has this new show, NFL Live.
Yeah.
On every interview I see Denny Green do, all the guys interviewing him are still playing this Cardinals team up like it's going to be a team that everyone should watch.
It has all the flashy
parts.
Yeah, from the
against Wilfork last week in
the new stadium and the new quarterback and Edgerrin James.
You know, but from the outside perspective, I agree with you guys. I mean, they have, like, you know, people say, look at the weapons on offense. They got a great running back, two great receivers, a quarterback who has been great at least, but they don't have anything
even
to protect
on defense.
Them.
They have, you know, the guy that
outside,
can stop the sack.
That's their problem. They have the outside, but they built from the outside in. Like, they have secondaries good, receivers good, defensive line not great, offensive line stinks. That's not how you win. You got to build the trenches first and build out. They've
but this guy, Leonard
opposite.
Davis, he's pretty good, right?
He's all right. He hasn't lived up to what he was supposed to be. So even him, he was supposed to be like a Jonathan Ogden Mahler type guy, and he hasn't really turned into that type of tackle. So
did my boy play the other night, Deuce Latuie?
No, but that's funny you mentioned him because he didn't start against the Patriots, so he's starting now.
I like him.
He won a starting job by not starting. That's how bad their offensive line's been.
All right.
And just a quick thing on that. We always rip Bill Belichick for different things.
I don't
question it. Okay, some of the rest of us
don't
do.
Don't include me in that.
Fred's never done that.
So this offseason, he has turned Ross Tucker, Brandon Gorin into draft picks.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, you got to give, whether it's him or whether you give Dante credit for developing these guys that you sign off the street, spend a couple years with you, and all of a sudden they're valuable enough to be trade commodities.
And Ross Tucker had no chance, in my opinion, of making the roster.
Right.
And
right.
Brandon Gorin was a bubble guy at best, and now you got two draft picks.
And now you might end up with a Willie Andrews next year,
right,
who you can use in some way.
Brilliant move.
They pick up
brilliant.
They know
how
to pick up guys for
system.
Nothing, and they spend a couple of years and they invest some time into them, and they generally find a way to get something. It'll probably be, you know, a sixth and a seventh round pick for in these two trades.
They get good players out
so
of it.
So what?
Usually.
But that's better than getting nothing for them,
right.
and you basically invested just time.
Yeah.
You didn't lose anything. You're picking guys off the scrap heap, and they develop them. And
plus, it's just draft
play.
Day commodities, because we know they can package
a
3 and a 6 or a 2 or whatever they want to do.
They have a number of draft picks next year because they're going to get probably going to get a fair amount of compensatory picks with losing all, you know, not just Givens and Vinatieri, but, you know, guys that you don't really think of, you know, Fourier, Matt Chatham, Tim Dwight. I mean, they lost a lot of free agents. Some of them are bound to make an impact on their new teams. You know, Andre Davis, yeah, there's another one, Andy. I mean, some of those guys are bound to make an impact, and you're going to end up with, you know, probably 3 or 4, you know, compensatory picks in addition to these 2 or 3 others that you're picking up.
And
in
I know the fans get antsy, but if you look at a team that never has any draft picks, like the Redskins, who goes out and signs everybody, you know, where's their winnings? You know,
yeah,
they
it's
went
just
to
a
playoff.
Different philosophy.
It's a different philosophy, and as of right now, today, the Patriots' philosophy has worked better than the Redskins' philosophy. Maybe that'll change in the coming years,
right.
But that's why when fans get, you know, well, we didn't sign this guy. The Patriots have a way they do business, and up to right now, their business is working.
All right, I got a feeling we could do this whole show without a break, but we're going to take one anyway. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Taylor Twellman with your New England Revolution. Learn to play like the pros at Revolution Academy.
Great free kick, diving header by Dempsey!
The Revolution Academy is now enrolling for the 2006 season and has designed innovative, challenging, and skill-specific curriculums for all age groups. Learn how to develop your game, see how the pros practice, and even get tickets to see a Revolution match. By the end of the program, you'll have learned skills to play like a pro.
Oh, now a shot! Unbelievable! Taylor Twellman!
The Revolution Academy is coming to Cranston, Swansea, Somerset, Tewksbury, Sudbury, Beverly, Foxborough, Smithfield, Westwood, Marshfield, Bedford, New Hampshire, and Portland. To find a session in a town near you or to register, call 508-384-9242. That's 508-384-9242. Or log on to revolutionsoccer.net and score a goal with the Revolution Academy. From sixth-round draft pick in 2000 to three-time Super Bowl champion and two-time MVP, Patriots quarterback Tom Brady has done it all. Until now. Tom Brady is 2005 Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year. And now you can get an autographed copy of the SI cover personally autographed by the perennial Pro Bowler himself. It's the must-have keepsake for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on the Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Sportsman of the Year Sports Illustrated cover autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autograph print limited to the first 500 with qualifying purchase. Visit PatriotsExtraPoints.com for details.
This is PFW in Progress.
You guys are arresting me for getting thrown out of a window? I got thrown out of a window, man! You were telling me something. What's the charge?
Disturbing the peace.
Disturbing the peace? I got thrown out of a window! What's the charge of getting pushed out of a moving car, huh? Jaywalking?
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
Yes. I'm looking for a gray-haired gentleman, very dark-skinned,
Capricorn, tell him that I went to the clinic today and I found out that I have herpes simplex 10. And I think Victor should go check himself out with his physician to make sure everything is fine before things start falling off on the man.
Paul Perillo.
Wow. You know, it says here that by the time the average American is 50, he's got 5 pounds of undigested red meat in his bowels. Why are you telling me this? What makes you think I have any interest in that at all? Well, you eat a lot of red meat.
And Andy. And Andy?
Jesus.
Andy Hart.
How you doing?
Some guy named Tom.
Now, this the man who wrecked the buffet at the Harrow Club this morning.
Lower your voice, for Christ's sake.
What, can a guy hear me through the wall?
Yes, he can.
And you never know, Lori might stop by.
We're not going to fall for a banana in the tailpipe. You're not going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe?
It should be more natural, brother. It should flow out like this.
Look, man, I ain't falling for no banana in my tailpipe.
PFW in progress.
I had to go to the bathroom. I was walking by. It looked like a nice, clean place, so I stopped.
It is what it is.
All right, let's get back to the talk here. I'm all jacked up, as you can tell. I'm ready to go. Let's see the start today. Yeah, this is great. Anyway, the email is webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. In case you want to call, I'll give out the phone number, 508-543-7482. I know email is the way people like to do it, because most people are doing it while their bosses are looking.
We're going to discuss Deion Branch, and you know, I know it was a preseason game.
Well, hold on for that. I just want to close out a couple more emails on the McSayow thing. Rob from Ashburn, Virginia says, I have an idea. Let's call them McSayow. And guys, everyone knows the true 55 is Chris Singleton.
I agree.
Remember
Excellent.
Him?
Well done.
And John Clark from Zephyr Hills, Florida says, I usually enjoy the show very much. My question is, are you going to talk about football instead of the numbers situation, which you obviously know nothing about? So John, tell us what we don't know about this. Because I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Can Willie McGinnis just retire his own number?
Yeah.
I guess we don't know anything about the numbers.
Cedric Cobb's called, and he doesn't want anyone using his number either.
34. He's a little upset at Tabucky Jones.
So we're like rookie football players? We
don't
even know what we don't know at this point.
Let us know what we don't know what we're talking about as far as numbers go. But, Tom, sorry to cut you off. Go ahead with the Deion Branch.
I know we were going
to
talk about Deion Branch, and I know it's only a preseason game, but you see what happens when you got Tom Brady back there. You just plug him in. Perfect passes, yeah. They make the catches.
And you play the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Deion Branch to fill in some of the people. I know we have people from all over the world that listen to the show.
I'm not positive on that.
You think he would have done the same thing against, I don't know, a good defense?
Well, I'll tell you this. I think he could have done the same thing against virtually all the defense. I'm not saying that they can win the Super Bowl with or without Deion Branch. I don't know for sure if they're that good.
Well, I know they could.
But my point is... My point is that I don't think that he's a difference maker. I think he's a good receiver. I think they have other guys they can plug in. They have other options other than wide receivers. And I agree with Tom. Brady's that good. I've seen good quarterback play overcome weak to mediocre receiving corps in the past, and Brady will do that.
I mean, who did Phil Simms have catching balls when they won a Super Bowl?
Stephen Baker, the touchdown maker, and Mark Ingram.
You know? They were good.
It's Mark the Walking Ego Bavaro.
I was going to say, they had Mark Bavaro. And
who
I think the Patriots might have not a guy that good, but
Brandon
I think Ben
Stokely.
Watson can be a very productive tight end.
So just to fill in some fans, because not everyone is from Boston and maybe you didn't catch the news. Last night, I guess Steve Burton, who is a sports anchor on the CBS affiliate here in Boston, was at a charity event that Deion Branch was at, and he caught up with him. And just so you know, that's a good place to sometimes catch up with guys because their guard's down. Anyway, he got it on tape, and then his brother, Phil, who works for a cable station here, ran it later on because he really couldn't get it out there quick enough.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because it's on the CBS 4 website.
Now it is. Now it is, yeah.
So it aired originally on CN8?
I don't know the exact thing. But anyway, basically what Deion's saying is that he has a good feeling that things are going to get worked out, and that he understands that the Patriots are just doing what they have to do, and that he's doing what he has to do. So, you know,
he also said, if and when I come back, and he didn't... The good feeling I've seen kind of promoted more than I thought it deserved reading all the quotes.
Well, I mean, he could...
I think he covered all his bases.
A lot of times, you know, the player will come out and just say, hey, look, you know, I got nothing to tell you. you know, it is what it, you know, that kind of thing. I rarely think I have a good feeling.
It as a PR thing because he knows everyone's starting to turn against him in New England, and I think it was more of a everything's going to be off.
It is what it is.
They're doing what they're doing. I'm doing what I'm doing. Blah blah blah. But I don't. What's he going to do? Show up the day before the Buffalo game, and all of a sudden, I just think this is getting ugly. Because we all thought
I play him.
We all thought he'd be here by now.
Well, it's funny because on one of the Paul's media sites, somebody was writing about the interview. Paul's just biting his tongue, and said, you know, Steve Burton said, you know, he looked in great shape, and the writer said, well, I don't know if he timed him in the 40 or not, whether or not how he can tell that. But
well, Deion said
Deion
he just
Branch.
Completed.
He's in great shape.
He's been doing his own two-a-days, and he has been working.
But why would we ever expect a football player in his prime not to be in
good
shape?
I totally agree.
Well, Junior Seau is 37. He's in phenomenal shape.
I mean, unless it's a lineman, I don't think that you could necessarily see if a guy was out of shape. I mean, how heavy is Deion Branch going to look?
What's he going to have, a pot belly? He's going to be smoking and eating donuts?
I mean, I think... No, I mean, I
he's
think...
He's not you.
I think there's a good chance that...
A Paul shot there.
There's a good chance that he probably has been working out all along, throughout this holdout. But if he hasn't, touched one weight or run one sprint, could you notice that by the naked eye?
Right.
With a guy that, Deion Branch, who's, 5'9"? What,
he's got 180
175
pounds,
180 pounds.
The most.
He's got no body fat on. It's not like, obviously you could have an offensive lineman who maybe is supposed to be 310 and he's been out for a year, and all of a sudden you can look, he's 350 now.
Right.
You could tell. I just don't see how you could tell a guy's in great shape. He's in great shape, guys.
You could say he looks good.
And a big shock.
We don't know about his physical
condition. Big shock that Steve Burton was, accentuating the positive there with the player.
He's not going to be able to just step out and forget about the conditioning. It's just reestablishing the timing, working with the other wide receivers. I'm sure they've thrown some wrinkles into the playbook, getting to learn those, so.
Don't worry about any of that because I think
I'd put him on
the
field
past.
If he shows up on Thursday before the game.
Yeah, but he's
proven in the past that he can be gone for a long period of
time. Yeah, he missed those 7 games, but remember, he had gone through training camp and all that. It's not like he didn't know the playbook and all that.
I'm not saying that he has to come out and catch 7 passes for 120 yards like he did in that first game back, but I think he'll be good enough.
And it also gets to, what's the alternative? Is Deion Branch, who missed one play that they added to the playbook, better than Bam Childers? Yes.
Although Bam Childers had a pretty good game, too.
Kept his eye on the ball.
But he's not better than Deion Branch.
Not an NFL receiver.
What?
Not an NFL receiver.
You think that? Really?
Yeah, I do.
He said it. I assume he thinks
he might make the team out of default. But
nah, I was just kidding. He's great.
We've been talking about it all summer. One or two of these guys is probably going to stay around by default, but I don't think he's an NFL receiver.
Speaking of not NFL, I'd like to address something, and I want Fred to be the main guy on this.
Uh-oh.
A reporter, and I won't mention any names, said that Jonathan Sullivan was improving. Now, all four of us have been watching this guy nonstop.
Including Fred.
And I don't want Paul's view, my view, or Andy's view. Let's go to Homer Kirsch. Fred, what do you think of Jonathan Sullivan and his play so far?
He's a tub of goo.
There you go.
Next topic.
He gets pushed around.
Unless I miss something...
he was on
the Cardinals game. He gets pushed back 4 or 5 yards in every play, and he's behind every play, or so far in front of it that by the time the play does get to him, the gain's already been made. He's not, it's a difficult position, the nose tackle. It's a point of contact that you have to maintain. That you can't. You have to maintain
he's
that.
He's not
space.
Maintaining anything.
He's not maintaining it. So then I saw him line up in a 4-3 a couple times. And again, I just don't see him. That's different. Now you're kind of working in space a little bit more, and I still don't see him getting to the play quick enough.
And don't you think that the biggest concern out of this whole thing is that we see a lack of effort? I see a total lack
of desire.
And other guys, they might get blocked, but they're fighting, they're trying. This guy just stands up and gets pile-driven, whoever he is.
Now, maybe you can make a case that from the day he came with the Patriots to now, he's improved. But it's all relative.
Right.
Because he can only go up.
So
I still don't see him making this team as of right now. Unless, we see a lot between now and September 4th or whenever the last cuts are.
Right.
As of right now, I don't see him making it, but that could change.
The only plays that I see him make, and I put plays in quotes, are when he gets knocked out of position so badly that he, by accident, ends up somewhere. We saw it in a practice once. You know, Tom and I, you know, we're in one of the stadium practices where he got pushed back all the way into the end zone.
5 yards.
And he ended up actually intercepting a pass because he wasn't supposed to be anywhere near where he was. We saw it the other night, and I think, I don't know what he got credited, you know, in terms of the game book for tackles, but we saw him make a tackle the other night when he got pushed so badly out of position that he ended up on the opposite hash mark, and the ball came back to him, and he kind of fell on the pile, and he was there. It wasn't the way you're supposed to make the play.
And God knows, I want him to do well.
We've all been objective.
Yeah. Yeah, I gave up Bethel Johnson, which, you know, I'm sorry, because I wish, you know, he has such raw talent. It was just a shame that we never saw his full potential here. So, you know, you get Jonathan Sullivan, and you're hoping that, you know, you get some value out of the loss of Bethel Johnson. But I just haven't seen it.
But we've been,
it's funny that you're just
about it.
It's funny that we're talking about this, because that ESPN, the NFL Live show that was on, it's probably a rerun from last night.
That new show?
They're actually showing a lot of highlights from the Cardinals-Patriots game, and they just showed a play that Vince Wilfork absolutely dominated. Just pushed the center 4 yards back into the backfield, knocked him into Edgerrin James. It was one of those plays. It was a play he actually fumbled. They got a gain out of it because the fumble went forward, but it would have been about a 3 yard loss. It's totally the opposite.
Yeah, Sullivan's
totally the opposite when you see Sullivan.
I'll tell you this: Vince Wilfork won't go to the Pro Bowl this year because of his name. He's not big enough yet.
But and his position.
But he'll be better than the guys. Most of the guys that go, he's going to have.
Not
that.
Because of his position, because someone will go, like Casey Hampton or one of those
be
guys.
A nose tackle.
Yes, they will.
But those are the guys. Casey Hampton is a nose tackle. He's
a guy who's the best player
tackle.
In football. Who I always forget his name in San Diego.
Jamal Williams. I talked to Vince a little bit today, and he mentioned some of those guys. And
And I feel I think he's going to make that kind of improvement this year. He's going to be that kind of dominating
player. So he'll be
player.
The one. This year he'll be the guy that on these type of shows they say, you know, Vince Wilfork, he hasn't built his name up yet. He's not getting the Pro Bowl.
Next year,
but he's been dominant.
You know what's funny is when they drafted Wilfork, I was as high on that pick as I've ever been on, you know, any of the picks that they've made. I just thought this guy, he fell into their laps. I thought it was a no-brainer pick. We all nailed that one, and we don't really get anything right, let's face it. I was excited about that pick.
Oliver Hoyt.
And now I even feel, I feel the guy is a budding star. I'm that high on, I mean, just he appears to me to have really uncommon athleticism for that position. I think he's getting better every year. Maybe because I like him, I feel even better about him. I think he's a nice guy, and I think he's a nice guy to talk to. But I couldn't say enough good things about Wilfork. I think he is going to be.
See, we're not always negative
guys.
Here on
no.
the show.
But maybe last year when he was getting pushed around a little bit and stuff at the beginning of the year, maybe Belichick, you know, gave him a good chewing out. And sometimes players need that. Maybe he's taking his game now to that next level.
And that's another thing I liked about him today. You know, we asked him about that specifically, and I think a lot of guys would have gotten really defensive about it. He stood right there and said, "No, I was playing like crap." He said he was getting pushed around. He was trying to be a little bit too aggressive, you know, trying to penetrate, taking off before he was supposed to, not necessarily playing the technique the way it was supposed to be. And he said it was a combination of just the light going off in his head watching film and the coach is telling him, "You're not doing this right. You're not doing that right." And it all came together, and we saw the differences. It wasn't, I mean, I like to always point to Seymour because he's another one of my binkies that I love, but it was a combination of a lot of things that improved over that second half of the year, and that was one of them. Andy made the comment, I think it was San Diego, when LaDainian Tomlinson just killed us. He was like a safety.
Yeah,
interesting.
He
so he admitted
backfield.
To it.
Oh.
Fred's never yet admitted
totally
to it.
Totally admitted that he was playing,
early last
playing
year.
Poorly, I think was the quote that he had.
Interesting. But he was dominating at the end of the year. Those last few games, he was just killing people.
And well, last week was the most dominating I've ever seen. A defensive lineman, the way he played, amazing. If he can do that even, you know, a percentage of plays this year,
Alex
that's
Alex
Stepanovich.
Huge. Isn't he a younger guy?
Well,
the center for the Cardinals?
Yeah.
He's a younger guy, right?
I think that Cardinals game...
he gave him a lesson.
You know, of course, it was just preseason, but that's the perfect example of one of those games where one team dominates on offensive line and defensive line, and because of that, they could just control the whole
right.
game.
Yep.
And the only thing that when you look at a game like that in the preseason that you wonder, you know how Bill talks all the time about sometimes another team's, what they're doing... You know, there's not really a lot of game planning involved. We know that. But sometimes the other team, what they do, you might be set up to be in a situation where no matter what you do, it's really not going to succeed against the things that they're doing, and you don't necessarily change it up because you want to run what you want to run and just get it going. That's the only thing in the back of your mind you wonder. Would the Cardinals have approached it the same way had they, you know, maybe gone and prepared, but you know, specifically? But I just looked at the physical one-on-one.
Yeah, that's not something that's
scheme.
A center,
so
if he's assigned to block,
I don't think it's
one of their game
plans. He's trying his best to block him. That has no scheme.
I fall on you guys' side.
That's something that is just, it's like Jonathan Sullivan. Either he can do it or he can't. Yeah. That center could not
block. I just don't want to fall into that preseason trap that we kind of criticize other people about.
And if they're doubling anyone, they're doubling Seymour. So Wilfork is still going to be one-on-one with the center.
I don't think praising the defensive line is falling into the preseason trap because the defensive line is phenomenal.
I think the defensive, our defensive line is excellent.
And if they can dominate like that, you'll have no chance to beat the Patriots. You might as well stay on the bus because they'll kill you.
And all of a sudden, guys like Junior Seau.
Speaking of that, maybe people in Buffalo who are listening to this, I've caught your offensive line in the first couple preseason games. Stay on the freaking bus. Trust me, you got no shot. None.
He's already declaring games over, Fred.
So
we know the Patriots will win by a late field goal.
Hopefully Gostkowski can connect on that 48-yarder at the buzzer, because that's usually Tom's guarantees how they end.
1-0, dominate in the trenches.
Are we taking emails on the show?
Yeah, we're going to do some emails. Let's get to some right now. This first one, Gary, while I'm reading it, you might want to try to get in touch with Ken Flanders, because only he would really have the answer for this.
You've reached the desk of Ken Flanders.
It comes from Nick from San Diego. He says, sorry I'm not writing from Europe, but San Diego is still pretty far. He's kind of tongue-in-cheek there.
Yeah, I see what
he did there.
I have questions about Chad Jackson, but I only have one that you can maybe answer. The Pro Shop is selling Jackson jerseys with the number 17. Why doesn't he have an 80s number? Will his number change after camp? There have been a lot of players that have had their numbers change after camp in the last couple of years. Warren, Colvin, Bannekane, Beisel. Isn't it unfair to have someone buy a $50 jersey and then change the number the player wears? I think we should ask Ken that.
Well, I think that Jackson's number is going to stay 17 because that's what he wanted. I do sympathize with the fan that would buy what was it, Colvin? Was he 51? He changed to 59.
But there's the answer. He wanted 17. He's going to stay there.
He wanted 17. Right.
Yeah.
He's going to stay there, but he wanted that.
The one I'd be more in fear of is the
Maroney. Maroney,
Oh, he'll still 39. That's a given. Yeah.
Well, I've heard certain things, but...
Really?
No, I've heard things
that's
that he's
going
to stay.
That's why we need to talk to Ken Flanders,
but
the retail
if he wants
manager.
To change, the opportunity may be there for him to change to a more prototypical running back number if he wanted to.
I can tell you that in talking to Ken Flanders about this, they don't intentionally try to get people to buy two shirts. They put a lot of research into this. They wait as long as they possibly can before they order shirts to make sure that, you know, Maroney in particular gets the number he wants. But sometimes there's nothing you can do. What do you do if Maroney comes in tomorrow and says, you know what? I want to be a different number. I mean, what if, you know, I don't know, Antoine Spann gets cut and he wants to be 31?
Right.
What are you going to say? No, you can't be?
Right.
But more importantly, why are you buying a Chad Jackson jersey? He hasn't done anything.
But how about the incredible luck of Junior Seau speaking of numbers? They just ripped that McGinnis right off and put Seau. All of the piles of the extra 55 jerseys.
According to Ken Flanders, he claims he didn't have any extra 55s left.
I don't buy it.
Let's see.
Also doesn't have any towels.
That's true. You can't buy a beach towel in the Patriots Pro Shop.
Continuing with the email, while trying my hand at GM, I was trying to figure out who the opening day roster. I just couldn't make some of those final cuts that will be close. I have my favorites, but that usually doesn't work its way to build physically. Eventually, I was just trying to divide the roster up by positions. Three spots go to... I don't know.
Just tell this guy to go get the latest edition of PFW, where Paul Perlow has a tremendous feature where he projects
well,
the 53-man roster.
Well, his question is, with the need of depth at defensive back, linebacker, O-line, wide receiver, is there any way we keep two fullbacks or fight four tight ends?
Yeah, you kept two, right, Paul?
Two fullbacks? Yes, Heath Evans and Garrett Mills.
And then, four tight ends, the three and Garrett Mills.
Right,
so.
Right.
So
So
not four in addition.
Yes, but it won't
be
six players. It'll be five players out of
that loser's
two and
not
four,
making
but
the team.
Yeah, and you know what I like
to ask anyone in the loser family, but his name is Chris Loser.
Can we talk about the whole four tight end thing?
Did we?
Can we? Sure. You know, the whole thing, you know, there's some talk, you know, the Patriots had four tight ends on the field for that goal line run that Dillon scored a touchdown. Mills was the fullback. He wasn't the tight end.
Right, and he made a block.
You know, I think it's the same as if, you know, you go back and you look. Remember when Romeo Crennel was still here and they had those defenses with no defensive linemen, Fred? Well, Richard Seymour was still on the field.
Right.
He just wasn't down as a defensive lineman. So you had defensive linemen on the field, but they weren't acting as defensive linemen. So Garrett Mills, yeah, you might think he's a tight end, but he wasn't acting as a tight end.
Right.
He was playing fullback.
And by the way,
that's the position that he's listed on the roster at.
Fullback. I used to like those what happened to that, the no defensive line?
Romeo left.
Well,
you don't think Eric Mangini had the stones to do something like that?
They did that Bill against the Bills with a lot of success.
Yeah, Bill forgot it?
I think that was a rack.
That was definitely a rack.
And there was no way Eric Mangini was raising his hand in a meeting and saying, what do you think about this, Bill?
And
Eric
Bill,
Mangini was trying to get
Bill
by.
Bill was asked about that, and he said that Rack had done it previously, and that's where he got it from. He made no bones about it.
I think you might see more wrinkles this year with Pease, because I think he has that kind of confidence where he'd be willing to throw something out there, defend it, and try it. I think you saw Eric Mangini last year being vanilla. You hear all the players talk about it, and I think part of it was a confidence thing. He just didn't have the confidence to try to be as creative. Maybe he didn't have the players. You know, maybe he didn't have the guys that could get it done to be vanilla and then move forward, but there was something missing there.
Yeah.
Well, now it's missing in New York.
About the linebackers, the email says, Darren Sharper has been campaigning for Jamie, his brother, to join him in Minnesota to win a ring together, which made me laugh. But the article also mentioned Jamie's workout with the Pats. I haven't followed him that closely, but he's more of a finesse linebacker than a run stuffer, in my opinion. I would put Gardner Brown in a lot of the other linebackers linked as possibles in that category. Why aren't we trying to replace what Ted Johnson brought to the team? Even Bruschi isn't a major presence when offensive lineman locks on. Could Roach be that run-stuffing guy someday, hopefully soon?
Well, that's what he is. He's
that
a run-stuffer.
Someday, but I don't think
I don't think he's ready to do that now.
There's not a lot of those Ted Johnson kind of players around.
That would
anymore.
Be my only comment. I'm open to suggestions. Where do you find
Yeah, because in college now, they're all the quick, you know, fast, lighter linebackers. You don't get too many of those two-down Ted Johnson guys anymore.
And, I mean, even some of the guys like Kai Parham was kind of that
mold.
He didn't stick long in Dallas. You know, we'll see what Brooks does in Cincinnati, because he has that size to be that. But even he's more athletic than that. It's a dying, you know, that true two down, two gap kind
of
run stuffing linebacker. They just don't have him in college. It's a game that's
Bill's
athletes.
They don't have the you know. I'm not saying that he's right, but I'm going to certainly go on his opinion more than mine. He says
except when
really
he disagrees with you, and then you call him an idiot.
I never called him an idiot.
Let's see.
Called him another name once.
Cecilia from Boston writes, and she says, I've been enjoying your program very much. You give the fans...
I challenge you to find it, though. I'm sorry, Fred.
Never stops talking.
Always got to get the last word in.
I was talking to Andy, not you.
that's what the button on your microphone's for.
Cecilia says, she's from Boston, you give the fans so much more information than we can observe ourselves. I like it when you take shots at the players. Do you think Belichick follows your program and sometimes laughs at your analysis?
Yes. No.
No.
I think
absolutely
he laughs at
not.
Us.
He doesn't follow the program, but if we presented to him,
he would definitely laugh. If he was even aware that we did this, he would definitely laugh.
He says, he asked, do you have any anecdotes of Belichick's comments on your analysis?
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, he once asked Andy what he was looking for.
I don't think
and Andy said, I don't know.
I don't think he would even grace us with a comment on what we do.
What are you looking for?
She says she agrees with others. We should have your pictures in the website somewhere so we can put faces to your voices.
Oh, I definitely agree with that.
I think we should just put Andy and Tom's biceps on the
personally think Andy has the best voice. Is he a good singer? And Tom has the boldest opinions. I also think Lori has to learn more about the team so she could contribute more to the discussion. It should be interesting here, football talk from the lady.
Let's turn it over.
See, people don't know it,
football,
but Lori's
Andy
right
Hines.
Here. She sits in on every show. We just don't hear from her.
Yeah, Kyle's here, too. I agree with her. I say Andy would be the best radio host out
but
of
I can't
of
sing.
All.
So don't.
I'm trying to get him a gig with somebody, but no one's biting. Sorry, buddy.
I'll skip over her comments on the game because, you know, we have a lot of emails to get through.
I am
right to her
loser.
Questions. She says, now that you've seen a lot of preseason games, can you name the top three teams in the NFL with the best situation for the quarterback position, having the best QB and the best backup? I think the current Patriots should be in that list. Well, you got to look at Arizona. I mean, you know...
even though we don't know about Leinart, but they've got Warner in
head, all the teams.
Yeah,
yeah, but it's hard because, to me, Arizona doesn't have any two sure things.
St. Louis has a good one with Bulger and Gus Frerotte. Those are two guys who can win.
That's
come
decent.
In and win.
That's not bad. That's not bad.
Well, what about Tennessee now?
I don't count rookies, Fred. I don't want rookies.
I think that's a terrible
especially
situation.
That rookie. I mean, I love Vince Young more than anyone on earth. No, I love him more than, but he's not necessarily ready to come in and lead a team right now.
Right. Billy Volek is the star. I mean,
people like him.
I think that he might be the 28th best starter in the league.
Atlanta.
That's they have.
Atlanta's got a good situation if you think that Michael Vick is ever going to be able to be more than a freak show.
I'm going Minnesota. Brad Johnson. And my boy,
yep.
Tavares Jackson.
I was watching him in the preseason, and I'll tell you, he looks like Michael Vick, wearing number 7. Oh, he's explosive.
How about Denver?
No. See, it's a rookie again.
It's a rookie.
I mean, who
so
knows?
You compare. So basically, it's so like she said, right. You could put the Patriots ahead of them because Castle has actually a little bit more.
And I like.
You think about this, you
I
feel
like
a little better about the position.
I like
here.
Castle. I really do.
How about Dallas?
I'm just not sure that he is.
Well, Tony Romo's
spot.
A starter, yeah. And Drew's a fine backup.
I think it's, obviously, Brady dwarfs Bledsoe, but it's a similar situation, Romo and Castle. They don't have any experience.
And plus, you don't know, maybe Miami?
Miami.
I mean, if Dante Culpepper's healthy and he's your starter and Joey Harrington is your backup,
right.
I mean, that's a pretty good situation.
I think Joey Harrington's a pretty good backup, sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But if Culpepper can't play at all, now Harrington's your starter, now, it's hard.
Is it
numbers? I mean, the Jets?
Of Johnson and Anthony Wright in Cincinnati behind Palmer? I mean, I don't know.
There's a lot of
interesting... A lot of guys out there that... To me,
it's a good question.
Really
it's an excellent,
I think that's
an
one of the best
questions
we've ever had.
It's an excellent question.
Her second question is, I know Brady
plus
likes...
Plus, she likes my voice.
She says, I know Brady likes to throw to the open receiver, but can you rank the top 5 receivers that Brady likes to throw to? That's hard.
On the current team?
Deion Branch.
Branch.
Who's open?
Kevin Falk, Troy Brown, yeah. Ben Watson.
Okay.
Did I need 5?
Yeah.
I guess you got to go Graham after that.
Yeah.
Gary Abrams writes in, I think you all agree that the Patriots are taking shape this year well and are showing in their preseason so far that there is potential to go deep into the playoffs. I, for one, am getting very psyched for watching the season's home games from my lofty seat in Section 304. Saturday night was a beautiful evening for football. The offensive line really seems to be getting in sync, opening holes for the backs and giving good protection for Brady and Castle. Depth and youth only seems to make it stronger. My question is, with the trade of Brandon Gorn, does this mean that Nick Kazier is close to being ready to come off PUP? Well, obviously,
he is off PUP officially.
He is off PUP. I think that this Canadian kid has a bright future here. What are your thoughts on the trade, Kazier, and do you think what kind of draft pick the Pats are going to get for Gorn?
Well, it was reported today that it's a 7th, could be a 6th.
Who reported that?
I don't know. I just skim clips. I don't necessarily read the byline.
Yeah. I'd be very surprised if it was anything higher than a 6th.
Yeah.
But it could be a 6th. I mean, he could start on that team.
Mm-hmm.
So you might get the bump of playing time, whatever.
I want to say 23 of 38 games.
Yeah, that's
top
a little fraudulent,
head.
Though.
Why?
Because Tom Ashworth was better than him last year, and I don't know what the situation was. Whether they felt comfortable Tom Ashworth being the fullback, backup, tight end.
Hang on a second, Andy. I meant to ask you this. I've watched 2 Seattle preseason games now, and I have not seen Tom Ashworth anywhere near the starting lineup.
Probably banged up.
All right.
I didn't see teams beating down Brandon Gorin's door to sign him to a, what did he get, $4 million up front or something?
Doesn't mean the Seahawks made the right move.
Speaking of Canada,
pretty good coach.
Frederick from Montreal writes in. He says, I enjoy listening to your show. I haven't missed one since the beginning of your podcasting. I'm a longtime Patriots fan, but found it hard to follow my favorite team in my hometown, which is Quebec. This is why I do enjoy all of your news, campcasts, and radio shows. Sorry if my first question is not related to football on the field. I'm preparing my football TV room for the upcoming season and wish to redecorate it with Patriots colors. I was wanting to know if it is possible to retrieve the exact color code of the blue, red, silver, and white used. Well, we can get that.
That is so...
Our graphics manager, Michelle Muse, might have that.
Does the NFL doesn't have a paint deal?
Yeah, well, no, it's not a paint thing. It's a... they do now.
I thought they did.
Yeah. I think one of the...
I don't know, but I think there's a company where you can get the official colors.
Yeah, we'll have to figure that out. They signed a licensed agreement with the NFL.
I guess I'm more unprepared for this show than even I thought.
here's the
oh, yeah, we
got
to get to Paul Singh that he prepared for at some point.
Here's the football question. We trade Gorin, a reliable offensive line backup, for an upcoming draft choice. Do you think that Gorin might have the value of a reliable third-string receiver and that a similar trade would have been better suited for the Patriots? It seems to me that the Patriots look more to prepare for 2007 and understand that they will only be moderately competitive in 2006.
Well, who would you have traded Gorin for? Like, what receiver?
I don't, and
a third-string receiver is close to a starter. And,
if you mean a number three receiver, or as or like a third string, meaning, you know, three guys would have to get hurt. Oh, I don't know exactly, but a number three receiver is not of that.
Ashley Lalee is a number three receiver. I mean, there was a third and a fourth pick, right. Like a T.J. Duckett moving. That's a valuable
Troy
commodity.
Troy Brown last year was the Patriots' number three receiver.
Let's be honest. If Denver called and said, "We'll give you Lalee for Brandon Gorin," Belichick would have went right up to him and said, "Get out." You know what I mean? Like, it would have been that quick. He'd have been gone. So,
and as Gary's pointed out, I would have been willing to drive Brandon Gorin to the airport. Nice guy. I liked him personally, but
a little too nude. He's like that naked guy on Friends, like ugly naked.
Ugly naked guy.
He's always walking around naked.
Always naked.
Yeah, he was always naked.
Ron in Tennessee says, "I just wanted to bring up an issue that has really been bugging me as a Pats fan lately, and I'm sure I'm not alone. The coaching staff and personnel department of this team have done an excellent job building both the offensive and defensive lines through the draft, have begun to reload the skill positions of Maroney, Jackson, Thomas, and Mills, and have even done a decent job in the secondary with Samuel, Hobbs, and Wilson. Why, then, have they refused or been unable to address the linebacking position? With the importance of linebackers in a 3-4, you would think this team would have placed a higher priority on this position." And then he gives examples of, you know, where they could have.
Well, can I have some of those examples?
Okay, well,
that's my question.
He says, "The excuse of drafting for value over need can only cut it for so long. Brewski had a stroke before the 05 draft, and the team did nothing of consequence. Beisel is nothing more than a backup, and Chad Brown was way past his prime and more suited to the outside anyway. Ted Johnson retires. Brewski and Vrabel are another year older. McGinnis leaves for Cleveland, and here comes the 06 draft. Nothing again. I know value over need. Let's not forget that part of the core of those championship defenses. McGinnis, Johnson, and Brewski were all high draft picks. I'm not saying that this team has to reach in the draft or use a first-round pick. I'm just observing that while teams like the Cowboys, Chargers, Steelers seem to have no problem filling their linebacker roster, ours gets thinner and older each year, which brings me to the most recent Pats move that caused me to write this email. The signing of Junior Shortest Retirement Ever, Seau, and the trading of Brandon Gorin for a draft pick. First, the Seau pick would have been great, say, 10 years ago, or even 5 years ago, but signing a 38-year-old off the retirement heap to an already aging position makes no sense. Why not Roman Pfeiffer or Brian Cox or Andre Tippett, for that matter? This move smacked of desperation, which leads me to my final point. Wouldn't it make more sense to trade Gorin for a linebacker on another team rather than a draft pick that you are not going to use on a linebacker anyway, at least not a good one, Ryan Claridge, wherever you are?"
When you said that you had examples, I thought you meant examples of linebackers that they passed on.
I have examples, because I thought he made an excellent point, because I was watching the Chargers and Cowboys play, and they are absolutely loaded at linebacker. And Bill always says how hard it is to find linebacker. Ben Lieber. He left the Chargers. He was a guy available, played in the 3-4. There has been linebackers that have been out there.
What did
there
he get?
They haven't signed. I don't know. But I'm just saying, it's an interesting thing to look at, because Bill always says how hard it is to find these linebackers, yet other teams running the 3-4 are going 8, 9, 10 deep at that position, and they're good players.
I think the most interesting one is the Steelers, because I think, like, Dallas has had a couple high draft picks at linebacker. San Diego, a couple high. The Steelers have done it without the high draft pick,
yeah,
and somehow seem to refuel their 3-4 scheme.
I'll say
every
this:
time.
Every time those guys become free agents, they let them go.
Right, and they just fill it in. So I think they're the most impressive in terms of doing that. I think the Patriots would have drafted a guy like Bobby Carpenter if they had the chance.
Well, and that's what I'm not saying that I'm defending every personnel move that they've ever made. God knows that if you listen to this show, I don't do that. But I'm just wondering. Everybody keeps saying, why not trade Brandon Gorin for a linebacker? Well, I think that would have been the best case, but who?
Probably right.
And I'm guessing the Cowboys, that was brought up
right.
at some point.
Maybe they laughed when they said, "I'll take that Shanley guy for Brandon
they
Gorin." Who knows? I don't know.
And I know nothing about Shanley. I just know Brandon Gorin.
You know, maybe Ben Lieber, who I do know a little bit as a player from his days in San Diego, maybe he wanted $2 million more than the Patriots were willing to give. I don't know.
I know, but as the guy said, at some point you have to put you have to get somebody. You know what I'm saying? Because we're getting a little older here at the linebacker position, whether it be the draft or some. I know they brought in Beisel and stuff, but at some point, somewhere, you have to bring in some linebackers that can play.
Well, here's where I might break away from the Patriots a little bit, and here's where I think that they may be opening themselves up for some criticism down the road, and it's that the system and the philosophy that they've employed has worked for them, but are they guilty of perhaps mismanaging the market right now and not growing with the cap? You know, and I've had a couple of people tell me about how they didn't really feel like there was anyone available that was worth the money that they were asking for. And this was not just linebackers. This was in free agency in general. They didn't feel like, a guy like Joe Jurevicius, for example, was worth $2.5 million. Well, that's fine. That's what they've done, and they've been very successful with that. But what I'm wondering is, to illustrate Tom's point, at some point you need some linebackers. If that's what a linebacker costs, you know, you can have your principal and say, well, so-and-so isn't worth that money. But at some point, you're going to be kind of caught with, you know, Barry right. Gardner and Don Davis starting an inside linebacker because you didn't think that Ben Lieber, and I'm not using Ben Lieber, I'm just saying that as a guy that was thrown out there, was worth the money right. that he was looking for. At some point, either the guys in the draft have to pan out for you, or you have to go out and get some veteran free agents that come in and play better than Monty Beisel and Chad Brown did last year.
Not just this year. I mean, Ed Hartwell. I seen the size of that guy in the Atlanta locker room. You're telling me he can't play inside?
Preaching to the choir here, baby.
And
I was all over Ed Hartwell when he was a free agent.
Oh, God. I mean, he did all but, send Bill a player profile of the guy. I mean, he kept writing about it every week. But maybe they didn't feel like he was worth the money that he signed for in Atlanta. I don't know. I don't know. I don't have the answer to these questions.
Antonio Pierce, who signed with the Giants last year and had a great year. I mean, there's been linebackers out there that they could have brought in, and they just haven't. And this is one of the things I'm kind of perplexed about, too. I don't know where they're going with this position. I have really no clue.
Right.
Al from Valdosta, Georgia says, well, there's a lot of depth on offense, enough that we should trade Brandon Gorin due to the apparent return of Nick Kazier and the apparent emergence of Ryan O'Callaghan. The bad news is that we appear to be thin at linebacker. It's almost embarrassing that we had to drag Junior Seau off the street. He's a Hall of Famer, but way, way over the hill. Monty Beisel appears primed to be cut. There are other issues at that position as well. This is not a rip on Deion Branch. Okay, so that's the end of that comment. This is not a rip on Deion Branch. He deserves to be paid by somebody. If not the Pats, then somebody else should pay Branch. But do you think the Pats would ever consider dealing Branch for some stud linebacker from someplace around the league, such as a Brian Urlacher,
yes.
maybe a Keith Brooking, plus a draft
yes.
pick, something like that?
Now we're getting a draft pick with Urlacher?
Yes.
In a heartbeat. I'll drive Deion Branch to the airport.
If I could get Urlacher straight up for Deion Branch,
I'll put him in a
Brooking, yes.
Drive him to Chicago nonstop if he wants.
And Gary, God. I don't even care if there's a lot of traffic. I would still drive him to the airport.
Yeah.
Hell are you talking about?
First of all, those kind of trades rarely happen in the NFL.
And those two players are non-tradable players.
I think when you have they're harder to get. So when you have a linebacker of that kind of talent, you know, you're not going to trade a wide receiver for him.
One thing about Deion Branch, and I mentioned it to these guys after I watched the Colts game, there's no comparison in my mind to Reggie Wayne. Reggie Wayne is big, he's strong, he's fast, he absolutely abuses cornerbacks, safeties, anyone that goes up and tries to cover him. Now, we say, well, he's not Marvin Harrison. You mean the first ballot Hall of Famer, Marvin Harrison?
Right.
But Reggie Wayne is a legitimate receiver in this league. Yeah. Deion Branch, I don't think, is even close to Reggie Wayne. So if he wants Reggie Wayne money, the Patriots won't give it to him. I can pretty much guarantee you that.
Finally, Al says, with a solid running attack, this team won a bunch of ball games in the middle of the 2004 season on their way to a Super Bowl without Deion Branch on the field, if you'll recall. So he's kind of backing up the thing that maybe they don't need him. So
I'm with Paul. I say they win the Super Bowl with
whatever
happens, happens.
I'm not going that far. I'm just saying.
Tom's saying they win the Super Bowl no matter what.
What time is it, Fred?
You mean 1:20?
Yeah. It's a little early.
A little early for that.
Usually those come at 1:50.
I'm on record.
Okay.
Me and Fred.
Bob is from Shenzhen, China. So that's.
Can we get Nick to talk to him?
Yeah, we should. But anyway, I think he just
crept it. No disrespect to the Orientals.
Keep reading about Kevin Falk's fumbles and tired of it. If you watch the man in games, most of his fumbles are because he is busting, and I mean busting his butt for that extra yard. Yes, sometimes he gets walloped by a man much bigger than him, and the helmet hits the ball and comes free. I wonder sometimes if the fans of New England are watching the same game. This guy is a great patriot. Start giving this guy some admiration, okay? Sorry, not a question, but tired of hearing of this about his hands.
I think Falk's one of the most valuable players on the team.
Okay, and
I think Paul did a boatload of research.
I think we all do. I think we all think that Kevin Falk is a very valuable member of the Patriots, and his presence is missed when he's out of the lineup. But the knock on him is that he fumbles the ball a lot, and it's not a bad knock. Okay, here it is. I went through all seven of his seasons, and I recorded every touch that he's had, and he had, in 7 years, 947 career touches. That counts rushing attempts, receiving, punt returns, kick returns. 947 career touches, 21 fumbles. Okay?
Are these just ones that were turnovers or ones that the team recovered
fumbles.
To? Okay, just
fumbles. Not
okay.
Turnovers, fumbles.
Right. Okay.
That's 135, on average, 135 touches per season and 3 fumbles per season. Okay, so that basically works out to 1 every 45 times he touches the ball.
What's the league average?
If Corey Dillon fumbled the ball once every 45 times he touched the ball, he would fumble the ball, every other game?
Right.
Okay? That's every other game. 45 touches?
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a lot of
fumbles. Didn't a lot of them happen early? Lately, he's been better. He's had one preseason lately.
I can give you last year, in 84 touches, he had 3 fumbles.
Last year?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I will say, in the postseason, he's had... I didn't add him up here. I didn't add up all his. But he only has 1 fumble in the postseason. That was in Denver last year. So he's been a little bit better in crunch time, and that's when he's made a lot of his big plays. But, and I'm not here to criticize, but the player himself thinks this is enough of an issue that he sought out advice from a rookie, Lawrence Maroney, who has a reputation in college as never having fumbled the ball at Minnesota. He sought out some advice from a rookie about his style of carrying the ball higher, similar to Tiki Barber, who had a major fumbling problem.
Try to get in contact with Tiki Barber.
And he's done the same thing. He says he carries the ball high, kind of in that up and down, more of a perpendicular
vertical.
To the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's trying to do that. He's been working on that in training camp. So if the player thinks enough of it to be a problem that he's changing it, then it probably was a problem.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's not something that the media has created. The guy has put the ball on the ground a few times.
Yeah.
And I said to Paul, I think part of it, I don't know if the Barber thing is a good comparison, because Barber, I think, is more of a straight line. And Falk is, he's trying to make all those wiggles, his arm. And when he does it, he has a tendency to lift his arm.
Yeah.
So the ball is dangerously available for anyone to hit. And I think that's, I think if you took that away, you'd probably take away some of his shiftiness and his ability to make people miss. So it's kind of a catch-22 there, because he'll lose value if he can't make the moves. But in making the moves, clearly he has a tendency, one every 45 touches, to put the ball on the ground. And, of course, there's some in there. There was that hit. What is it? Was it Marion a couple years ago?
Oh, he's
just
gotten,
knocked him the bleep out.
He's gotten some unbelievable hits on some of his fumbles that
again,
anybody would have fumbled.
I think
on.
It's the same thing, because he's gets caught upright and flat-footed when he's trying to do one of those shake and bakes. A guy he doesn't see just lays him out.
Right. Okay. Good background there, Paul. I like
and
that.
That's why he didn't know Deion Branch talked this yesterday.
He was all 2 hours doing that.
Jeff spent 5 minutes doing it, but I didn't know that Deion Branch had any new news. And evidently, there was no new news, so
Jeff
I didn't
from
miss anything.
Oh, boy. Jeff from Sydney, Australia.
Good eye.
I really love the podcast for fans down under. It gives us so much more than just reading the website. Could each of you give your opinion as to which rookie you think has been the most impressive and who has been the biggest disappointment?
I'll let Tom start. Go ahead.
Oh, the biggest disappointment?
Oh, no, I thought you were
Most
start.
Impressive, Dave Thomas. Biggest
That's
disappointment, Chad Jackson. And listen, yeah. I understand it's an injury. I know he's not dogging it out on the field and all that. But if you're saying what's a disappointment, it's Chad Jackson not
just
being
disappointed.
In this,
he's not out
here.
There.
Yeah. Because I think we all expected, even if he only caught like 40 balls, 8 of them were going to be touchdowns, the long plays down the field. And now, especially without Deion Branch on the field, you really need Chad Jackson speed and big playability out there, and he's not there.
Right.
Okay, so I'll take
disappointment's a great word for that, and I agree. Disappointment, because I think we all expected a lot.
Who? Nobody more than me.
How about you, Paul?
I'll throw Willie Andrews out there because I think
those are the three.
No. As a surprise rookie, I think we all knew that Maroney and Thomas were good. We thought that Jackson would be in there too, but Willie Andrews, 7th round pick. I've even been impressed with him flat out as a cover guy in the secondary. He's well down the depth chart and hasn't gotten a lot of reps, but he sticks his nose in there. I've seen him make some terrific plays late in the Atlanta game in the preseason. Now they got him working a little bit at receiver out there at practice again yesterday with his white shirt on. So evidently this is not just a whim. He's going to take some days here to see if he can learn the receiver position. And I've liked him for the most part with a couple of bumps in the road here and there. I've liked what he's done as a return man. So a seventh-round pick.
At what point will you turn on him? When he makes this team, when he catches some balls at receiver, when he plays a little in the secondary, and the stories start of Bill Belichick fined again in the late round, and he's this great Dan Klecko player.
I think he can start selling jerseys.
And
well, if he's as good as Klecko, then you turn it on him.
You'll turn on him. I think you just answered the question, and Tom just answered the question. Klecko had those stories written about him without having ever done
anything. He was on the field.
When?
When Richard Seymour
couldn't play one night,
yeah.
and he played safety in Denver?
Yeah, and that's remember, what Willie Andrews is not going to be starting at corner or starting at wide receiver.
But he's
going to
be out there as a
And I'm not sure he's going to have the return role now.
I'll admit, if he doesn't,
okay, if he doesn't, I'll answer your question then. If he doesn't have the return role and he doesn't play and he has those stories written about him, that's when I'll turn on him.
He's going to be out there at some point, but he's not going to start
in
any role.
I'm guilty of this, I'll admit it, but I remember when he was a rookie and we went to the rookie mini camp. I remember saying that, geez, Klecko on the defensive line, he just gets off the mark so much faster than all the guys. Thing is, I was comparing him to a bunch of guys who weren't going to be on the team. But he did look impressive in that rookie minicamp.
He liked him because of his name.
And another guy I didn't like.
You guys talked something old school wrestling or something.
Another guy I didn't like early because of Andy's faulty reporting was Ryan O'Callaghan. But I think I'm adding him to my Pro Bowl mix with Dave Thomas and Lawrence Maroney.
I say all three
three make the Pro Bowl in 3 years.
Where's the faulty reporting?
Three Pro Bowlers drafted in one draft.
Were the Pro Bowlers?
O'Callaghan, Thomas, and Maroney.
But more importantly, let's go. What faulty reporting?
He said he had a bad attitude. I like his attitude. He got some toughness.
And I got that from his college line coach. So I think dealing with him for four years, I'll go with the college line coach.
He thinks he's the best. He's come out here. He's proven that he's so far the best at that position. So he stopped listening to his coach in college.
Ryan O'Callaghan.
I think we need some of that attitude around here.
I agree. The first time he doesn't listen to Dante, he'll find himself flat on the bench.
Nope. So far, he's starting.
Because he has something to prove right now.
Well, I guarantee,
based on what his college coach said,
5 minutes ago.
I like him as a guy to play.
Hey, what about
but he'll take a
Stevenson
step back.
Guy? Does he have a shot?
More of a guy down the road, I think, who could possibly...
Haven't really seen much of him.
Yeah,
I gave him a spot on the roster, but not really based on anything that I've seen.
I don't think he's going
to
do anything.
The only thing I got is Charlie compared him to Joe Andruzzi and loved him. That's the only thing I have right now because I really haven't seen much.
The only rookie I think right now that could possibly be cut is Mincy. Because I think Pierre Woods is clearly elevated over him on the depth chart. And if they can't find room for him, that might be somebody who's fighting for a roster spot.
Okay. Jim from Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. Some may question why Junior Seau would sign with the Patriots just days after he retired. Well, it's an easy one. When he decided to retire, Junior probably felt there was no real opportunities left for him to do anything more in the NFL. When the Patriots called, the door was open for him to do that one thing he felt was missing, being part of a super championship team. And I agree. That's why I said he signed.
Yeah, but he didn't have to retire last week. Play it out. Wait a little longer. That's the only problem I have. When you make a decision, I mean, I think he should have stuck with it. He didn't know the Patriots were thin at linebacker.
And crawling at his door, and he finally got it.
I think the way he used the San Diego Chargers leaves a bad taste.
And Andy, why don't you discuss about how a lot of people in San Diego feel about Seau so the fans can hear?
Well, I don't know. I was on in a San Diego radio station. A guy called in and was wondering aloud, as a Chargers fan, how Seau was going to fit here because even when he was at his best making plays for that defense, he basically had free reign, was a freelancer, was allowed to do whatever he wanted to do, and this guy was asking, isn't New England a place where it's very structured, you have to fulfill your role, whether it's make the play or allow someone else to make the play, whatever it is.
Let's not nail it down to that one fan. I mean, it's been reported out there from time to time that he is that kind of
That could be an issue here, no?
No, it's a good point. It's a fair point.
We'll find out.
Two, as far as the question as to whether Junior Seau should wear 55, I say as long as Willie is still playing with another team and has not retired, then the number is open to be used by other Patriots.
As it will when he retires.
Is it just me or didn't, this is three, is it just me or didn't Troy Brown look really good this past weekend? He looked like he's back to his old form and ready to be one of the top receivers again.
Happens when you're playing.
Do we ever find out why he didn't play at all in the first half and only came out in the second
half? Oh, we're thinking more that they wanted him with Castle, right?
Well, that's what I said, that maybe they wanted Castle to have him.
No, we didn't find out.
Maybe Castle, they wanted to give Castle an NFL caliber receiver to play
to. Yeah, I think that makes sense, you know. Ethan writes in, well, I was not on the Tom Casale bandwagon, but after his excellent suggestion of Drowning Pool's Bodies for the new touchdown song, add one more to the fan club. I don't even know. How does that song go, Tom?
Let the bodies hit the floor.
Oh, let the bodies hit the floor? Okay.
Fine.
Gary, how's that poll going?
Gary?
Yeah, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt your game.
He had a bunch of chew in his mouth.
Just fine.
Had a mouthful of
come on, no Thunderstruck. They play that all over the place. Be unique. No Thunderstruck.
I know all the contracts.
That's not my vote.
No, I didn't say you. Well, I was talking to the fans.
You gave them the options, and you didn't give them, what is it, Drowning Pool?
We already play AC/DC here.
I know all the contract talk recently has focused solely on Branch, but has there been any talk, rumors, innuendo about deals getting done for Samuel, Copen, or Tully Bantikane? I know there's been a lot of shouting over the leftover cap money we still have, and I figure these guys have been doing their all to earn some of it. Do you see extensions coming up for any of these guys? I would have included Graham, but already know you figure he is headed elsewhere. Do we think Graham's headed elsewhere?
I do.
Yeah,
I do. That doesn't mean, I'm right.
Depends. We haven't heard anything about the guys who are up for free agency next year.
But, Paul, don't you feel that on the open market, Graham will get paid a good chunk of change?
Yep.
And but the Patriots could come and offer him money, and I don't think he would just leave no matter what.
No, I don't. Well, I don't think they're going to offer him a good chunk of change, as Tom suggested.
Someone like Denver, maybe, where he's, you know, where he played college.
That's how I feel. Team's been kind of looking for tight ends.
Make him more.
He's from that area. I think that he's a little bit disappointed that he hasn't gotten more opportunities to be more of a receiver. Now, this could be a year for that to increase a little bit based on the wide receivers and kind of based on the way Bill's been talking. I don't know if you guys have picked up on it. He's thrown a couple of comments about Graham around lately about how he's been more involved in the passing game than he has in any previous camp. And I don't know. This is the one guy I'm truly inconsistent on with most of my beliefs. I don't feel like he's nearly as big a disappointment as most other people do. I think he's been pretty good. I think he's been injured a lot. But I think he's been better in the passing game. Does he have the greatest hands? Absolutely not. We all know, we can all point to a drop here or there that have really been unacceptable. But I've seen him make a lot of big plays in the passing game, and I don't see him talked about those big plays the way Ben Watson gets talked about. I've seen him, you know, in Atlanta last year, he ran over guys on that screen pass, and I didn't see, like, you know, 3-week, you know, highlight clip of him the way we did Ben Watson after that Jacksonville one. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to downplay what Watson's done, because I think he's excellent, too. I think he's got a lot of big playability, but I think Graham, maybe not to the level of athleticism Watson is, but, you know, as Bill said, no one is.
Right.
I think Graham's pretty good. I don't think he gets his due.
James from Dyer, Indiana, says, love the show and especially the podcast. It makes my two-hour commute on Thursdays tolerable. I have a question concerning the fines Branch could assess during his holdout. If he holds out until week 10 of the season, the length of the holdout would approach 112 days since the beginning of camp at $14,000 a day. That would bring his total fine to $1,568,000. This is even more than Branch is scheduled to make this year. So would Branch actually have to pay the Patriots a $500,000 to play the last 6 weeks of the season, or does the $14,000 a day in fines stop at the end of training camp? One last question about the holdout. Can you guys remember anyone in the past who was actually held out that long? If you can remember, what was the outcome for that player? Did he end up getting the contract he wanted? Keep up the great work. Can't wait till you guys start doing this every day.
He got traded.
Keenan McCardle did it a couple years ago with the Chargers. And
we did it with Tampa.
Tampa. And was traded to the Chargers, and I believe for a pretty decent salary, right? You can't compare it to Branch because he was older.
But he got a deal in San Diego that he wanted.
Right. He was an older player, so he ended up getting what he wanted.
Didn't Joey Galloway hold out for a whole year as well? Mm-hmm.
I thought those. Yeah, and then he got two number ones.
That's because
I didn't mean to bring that up, Tom.
Well, I'm saying, maybe the Patriots ought to call Jerry Jones and say, you got any number one draft picks you want to give up for Deion Branch?
But I thought those fines were for training camp.
I think it's a day period.
I've heard it's day, right? No, it's
I thought it was a day, really? Period.
I thought it was every day you don't report.
You're holding
to the
out,
team.
And you're able to fine him up to $14,000 per day that he holds out. I didn't know that was just training.
I don't know for sure. I just thought it was because I thought the punishment for the season was you didn't get your game check.
I just don't think that the fines. I don't think you might be right about that. It may be.
Yeah,
the fining might be at
checks.
The end of the fining might just
camp,
go up,
right.
Yeah.
Go up to training camp. But I think either way,
so then it's even more money.
Of course, we might not know because they haven't finished writing the new CBA yet, right?
Right,
we're working on it.
Every time I read about that, it's they're kind of trying
still
to figure out rules.
CBA, but I just don't think it's that big of an issue because I don't think the fine has anything to do. I don't. You can fine him all you want. That's not going to force him to come back. He thinks that he's right. He's standing on principle, and I don't think he's right. But that doesn't matter what I think. I don't think the fine has anything to do with this for him.
Let me ask you guys a question. Say the worst happens, he sits out, he comes back. Does he play or is he on the inactive list the rest of the year?
When does he come back?
He comes back in week 10.
Well, I think the big part of that depends on what's going on in the field. You know, let's say they're 7-2 and he comes back. He's inactive at least initially. You know,
right.
I mean, the urgency to put him back out there isn't going to be there. But
so do you only put him out there if you're like 5-5?
Well, I think he's going to go out. He's going to play eventually. I just don't know when he plays.
If you're 7-2, why don't you just wait? If you go 8-2 and then 9-2 and 10-2,
but I think he comes.
No,
back
I know.
And
but
plays
if you're 2-7,
ready.
Obviously you don't have to play him because your season's
right.
over. So do you only play him immediately if you?
Then you make him play
5-5.
You know,
or you could do that.
Right.
I hadn't thought of that, Fred.
Right. I just think that he at some point he's going to play because they're going to need him, and I think the precedent here is Terry Glenn. You know, in 2001. Belichick did everything he could to keep the door open to get Terry Glenn motivated and back on the field after he played that one game against San Diego. Couldn't do it. I mean, he kept, you know, sitting out the hamstring, you know, I don't want to play. I did want to play. By the way, the last time that Steve Burton had news. You know, in that whole situation, he kept trying to get Glenn back on the field right into the playoffs until he finally suspended him because of insubordination. I think that even if they're 7-2, he might not put him out there that first week because he's not ready. But he knows that Branch will make his team better and give him a better chance to win the Super Bowl. Quote-unquote, best interest of the team.
Rob in Virginia says, great show last week. Tom, big congrats on being on the Patriot Rock Radio Network Saturday night. It was good hearing a knowledgeable person on it for once. I start the...
Wait a minute, is that a shot at me and Paul?
I'm not on that anymore.
Doing it for 2 years.
I'm not a part of that Rock Radio
I start
Network.
The
but he said for once, which means he's listened in the past and there was no knowledge brought to the table.
Evidently, he's basing that on week one of the preseason.
Idiot.
I start the Replace You for Borges campaign right now. That is only if you want the job. Also, what's going on?
Of course he wants the job. I saw Borges blow by me in a Mercedes on the way to that pregame show. Tom's got
the
Hyundai whose door doesn't work.
How was that, Tom? Did you have fun doing that?
Yeah, it was fun.
Good.
You know, they do try to sometimes go negative.
Well, I'll show you how they tried to set me up once. Remember when Cordell Stewart got allegedly caught in the park with another man? Okay, that was the night before we were playing Pittsburgh.
She's doing
Pittsburgh.
Good.
So I was on that morning, and they nailed me with that question. You know,
what'd you say?
I said something like, all I know is that, and who was the center for at the time?
You look like a duck and you act like a duck.
Who was the center for the time at Pittsburgh? I forget his name. But I said, all I know is that so-and-so said all the practice had to be done from the shotgun.
Jermonte Dawson?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Jermonte Dawson.
Wouldn't have gone that direction.
Anyway, but they set me up with that one. Rob also says, what's going on with Seau? I know he's a little old. But I just ordered his jersey from the pro shop. It arrived yesterday with an AARP card and a $100 discount coupon from the scooter store.
Hi, you've reached the desk of Ken Flanders at Gillette Stadium.
Are they going to have those? Are they going to have Seau 55?
They're already there.
AARP cards?
Seau 55s.
Do they?
They're in the pro shop.
Seau?
Really?
Yeah. Really? Wow, that was fast.
Shut up. They are?
My information tells me they're already in the pro shop at Patriots.com pro shop.
Wow. Living down here in Redskin country and following David Patton, I don't think he's going to make the squad. One catch, 15 yards. I think both James Thrash and Mike Espy will beat him out for the 4-5 spot. They both play special teams. And I heard that Deion Branch was close to dropping his agent. You don't think it's going to be Borges because that guy continues to sing his praises every chance he gets.
is...
I hadn't heard that he was close to dropping
his agent. Okay, I'm just going to continue to plead the unprepared for the show.
That one I don't know anything about.
I heard that that's the only way this thing's going to work out, is that he does fire his agent.
Funny, I heard the opposite, that this was Dion.
Well, whether it is... The
Someone
guy has
told
to
us
save
that
face.
Recently. Who told us that recently?
I don't remember.
That everybody keeps putting this on the agent,
yeah,
and it's Dion. Someone said
that. I think
that
that's, just yelling across that's an easy cop-out for everybody. Well, it's not the Patriots. It's not Dion Branch. Let's blame the guy we don't know and we don't care about. Listen, if Branch wanted to be here, he would be here.
That's true. At some point, the player has to take responsibility. The agent works for him, not the other way around.
Because correct. These people,
you know,
are
or you get a situation like last year with Watson, where Condon said, "Look, you know, Ben said, look, I want the deal," and the agent said, "I'm not going to put my name on a 6-year deal," and they split ties.
Right.
You know,
I mean, unless the fans think that Dion Branch is the dumbest human being alive, because if you just have to be told what to do all the time, and well, maybe he is. I don't know. I don't know him that well, but that's all I'm saying.
Greg from Winnipeg, Canada, here's an over-under. You guys ready?
Sure.
All right, number of playoff wins for Peyton Manning this year, 1.
Over.
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 So he'll be get more than 1?
Mm-hmm.
I disagree. I say under. Well, I think it's going to be a push. I think he'll get 1. Number of rushing yards for Corey Dillon, 1,000.
Over.
Over.
Under.
Number of interceptions by any Patriot defensive back, 4.
Over.
Over. Samuel.
Number of starts by Lawrence Maroney, 2.
Over.
Number.
How quick we all said over.
The ranking of the Patriots defense, 15th.
Under.
So it'll be better than that.
Yep.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Under. I meant over being better than that.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with better.
Okay. I say they rank somewhere between 15 and 1, whatever that answer is.
Okay. I'm with Andy.
Yeah.
Number of passing yards by Tom Brady, 4,000.
Under.
Say under. Okay. Number of wins by the Patriots, 10.
Under.
Over.
Everybody's saying over 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good job, guys. Number of Dion Branch. See, now Paul's going to. Oh,
I'm all mad
I
at Fred.
Damn that. Number of Dion Branch misses due to holdout games. 1.
Over.
He misses
over.
More than one
over.
Game he misses.
Yep.
Okay.
No, he comes back tomorrow. Which everybody's saying, right? That's what everybody was saying in the locker room today. He's going to be back tomorrow.
Number of sacks.
Wait, who said that?
Media.
Not players.
Not players.
But based on. In regards to
see, Burton told
three...
Nothing. Based
Burton
on nothing.
Doesn't know.
Let's see. Number of sacks by Richard Seymour, 4.
Over.
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 And number of receiving yards by any Patriot wide receiver, 1,000.
Under.
Under.
Okay.
So individually?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, under.
Stan the Man writes in, just a question about the Branch situation and what your thoughts are. In retrospect, I find it interesting the Patriots went after Mason only a few months after Branch took home the Super Bowl MVP. Do you think the Patriots understood that Mason was a much better receiver long term for the club, or that maybe at the time they knew Branch might be a problem to extend, or a bit of both, or something else? Might the fact that the Pats did this in any way influence Branch in his decision to dig in deep into the trenches on this holdout? My thoughts are that this either gets done in a week or so, or the Pats will make a trade for a wide receiver or two and leave Branch hanging.
Well, speaking of agents, I'd like to know who Derek Mason's agent is, because if he was playing for the Patriots, he'd catch 150 balls a year. The guy catches like 90 to 100 now playing with average quarterbacks. Could you imagine what he would do with Brady? He's a perfect receiver for this system. I think he made just a terrible, terrible mistake going to
he did
Baltimore.
It for his wife.
His wife made the
mistake. Oh, is that was the... Yeah. Oh, okay. Well,
still a bad
another case of a woman ruining some guy's life.
Yep. Ain't happening.
But I don't
me.
Think the Derek Mason situation has anything to do with Dion Branch.
I don't know.
Just my personal opinion.
But the other point he said, do you think the Patriots foresaw this a little bit? Because I've heard rumors that for the last couple years, or since Dion signed that first contract, he's been looking toward this day.
With Derek Mason, you're saying?
Oh, with Branch.
I think, no. What I'm saying is, I think the Patriots thought that he could be a hard free agent to sign. I just don't think Derek Mason had anything to do with it.
I don't think that may, no. But I think his other point, he said and or. I think the or might be a factor. That the Patriots have seen this coming.
You don't have to reread it, but I think he was talking about Derek Mason.
Okay. Matt they from Cambridge,
this
England.
And try to sign Derek Mason.
Matt from Cambridge, England, just a couple of points for you to talk about this week. Firstly, after Gostkowski handled all the kicking duties against the Cardinals, I think that he has definitely got a roster spot for kickoffs and long field goals. If Gostkowski has an awful couple of weeks from now on, I think Ramadic could be used as the regular kicker instead, and both kept on the roster as there will only be two QBs. Secondly, the addition of Junior Seau adds some veteran leadership and experience to the team that was lost when Willie and the others left. Even if Seau only sees limited action in a situational run stopper role, I like the move as it protects the Patriots' other inside linebackers who have failed to make the grade so far this season and gives players like Barry Gardner a few more some more time to adjust to the defense.
I agree with Paul. I think guys like Harrison are leaders. I'm not so sold that Seau is the leader that people think that he is. I mean, when I see Harrison, when you watch him play, when you see him on the field, I think to myself, that guy's a leader. I never really said that with Junior Seau. That's before he came with the Patriots. That's 5 years ago, watching him on TV. I don't know if he's that leader that people think that he is. And he's certainly not going to come in here and be a leader with Bruschi, Harrison, Seymour, Brady, and those type of guys. I don't see it.
What about all the praise Harrison has had for him, though, in terms of leadership and learning from him? And do you put any stock in that?
Well, I'm sure he's learned some things from him. I just don't know in this situation. You know what I'm saying? Because this team already had. Do you think he would be a bigger leader than Mike Vrabel?
Well,
I mean, I see Vrabel barking.
Harrison came in immediately and was a leader. He was a captain immediately. He came in and was, boom, splash.
But
leader.
Harrison had a huge, huge contribution to the team as well. I don't think Seau's.
No, but I'm saying he was a captain before the season started. He was elected captain right when he got here. Boom, captain.
And I think he's the consummate leader. I think that's the guy I look at. And
I don't think of Seau in that light either. All I'm saying is the guy we do think of in that light, if you believe what he's saying, looks at Seau in that light.
Yeah, I just think that it's he's being classy. I think Brady was being classy when he had a lot of good things to say about McGinnis in that regard.
What was the first part of that? Because I had something I wanted to say. What was
about the
first?
Kickers.
I think he has the job, but the way he puts it, if he misses every field goal from now until cuts, maybe they'd have to keep both.
I would say that I think the rookie would have to completely fall apart, and I don't think there's any way that the only way he would keep two kickers is if the rookie completely, utterly fell apart in the last
Saturday night. Did they let Guskowski do it all again, or did they let Gramatica do it all again?
I'm going with Guskowski at this point.
They haven't decided yet that. They'll come up with that later in the week.
I'm asking you.
It's day to day.
We asked Bill.
It's day to day.
All right.
And I thought Bill, and Tom wrote it in his notebook, I thought Bill gave Gramatica his letter of recommendation for future jobs today.
Gotcha.
Competition. So he's been competitive. It's been a competitive camp.
So we know that. Earlier in the show, we had a caller who wanted to paint his bedroom with the NFL colors. Melissa from Attleboro says it's Glidden that does the NFL colors, glidden.com. So you can go there. She said she painted her son's bedroom over the past winter in the team's colors. So Glidden, GLIDDEN.com.
Hey, I got the Green Monster on my son's wall.
They have a deal, too. They got an ad behind home plate all the time now. Red Sox red in buckets.
I guess I'm not that creative. I got a poster of John Belushi slugging down Jack Daniels with a sweatshirt that says college on it.
Brian in Miami says, Seau, now I can't say his name, Seau is so annoying. As much as I could not stand to play against or even watch Seau play, I'm glad he's on our team. He appears to be in great shape, and his intangibles are too numerous to list. I would love to see him inside with
Belushi. List a few of those.
Oh,
what?
Some of his intangibles.
All right, well, let me go on.
Are they?
I would love to see him inside with Bruschi, and I think he'll play a lot more of a role than most people are expecting. He will start the season at middle linebacker and will be a much better option than Gardner, Davis, and Beisel combined. Bill seems to get the most out of free agents late in their career, like Cox, Pfeiffer, Washington.
Brown.
Rick Lyle and Cam Cleland. Does anyone agree with me?
No.
No.
I do. Also... Also,
wait a
Pro Bowl.
What would you consider someone saying getting the most out of somebody? Would that be make the best the guy played, or you know, at that stage of his career, no one could have gotten any more out of him?
Yeah, exactly.
Roman Pfeiffer, I think Bill Belichick got the most out of him.
Okay, well, Brian Cox, I think he was a far better player elsewhere than he was here finishing up with the Patriots.
Single-handedly the most overrated hit.
Fred, don't you
think
that's kind of hard at middle linebacker, like putting a player where he can succeed? Because if he's a step slow or if a guard locks onto him and he can't get away, that's the one position where it's a little tough.
Sure.
Or if he's never really played the position before, like Junior Seau, who's primarily an outside linebacker.
I'm wondering how him and Bruschi are going to get along. Bruschi seems to me like someone that might not like everybody.
You know what else I thought was...
He's like the alpha male. This
changes,
is my turf
in here. It changed from minute to minute with Teddy.
Well, you know what else
you'll
I
like
thought
it
was interesting? In that light, he was asked about how Teddy Bruschi was today. You know, how has he been in the meetings and has he helped? And he said he helped Seau. And Bill said specifically that He's great in that regard. He's always in the meetings. He's very helpful. He's the ultimate team player. He's willing to help anybody that wants it. And I thought that was an interesting way to put it because, first of all, I don't think necessarily that Monty Beisel last year wanted the help, number one. And I'm not so sure a guy like Junior Seau, I don't know how he is.
Right.
But he may think,
hey, he's always been the man.
Listen, son, this is my 17th year. I don't need you to tell me how to do it. Now, maybe he'll be the exact opposite. And he'll say, I've never played in this system, really, besides a little introduction to it in Miami last year. Maybe I need all the help I can get.
I think
Who
that
knows?
Seau, my opinion, and you're going to laugh at me, I think he's done what he's going to do. I think he's here simply to contribute to a team that has a chance to win a Super Bowl.
If that's true, I think it'll work out.
Right. If he does that, I think it'll all be fine.
Can he contribute?
I think in a limited way, I think he can. And I think that playing time's not going to be a factor for him. I think it's at the end of the season. If I can say that I helped out winning this team to win a Super Bowl, my career is complete. And right. I think that's the attitude.
Can we just say one thing, Fred? Saying that he's better than Barry Gardner and Monty Beisel, that's not necessarily a big vote of confidence in my book. You
it
know
isn't,
what I mean?
But like, it's better for the team.
Right, it is.
Yeah.
But that's...
all right, okay.
But that's all you got right now.
Let's see.
I'll take the guy who can curl 150-pound dumbbells over those guys any day of the week.
No question.
Brian says, also, what was up with that Burton interview last week? Burton looked really awkward asking questions. Was he just there covering the basketball game, or did he know Branch would be there? On another note, T.O. is a bum, and I hope Dallas cuts him. So, you and Tom agree on that, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know anything about Steve Burton and how
I didn't
his
see
mentality.
It. I don't know if you guys know, but I'm very unprepared. I did not see that interview.
Pat's Fran at San Fran said, I heard Len Pasquarelli say some front office people around the league have accused the Pats of organizational arrogance, believing they can plug anybody into their system and still win. He was talking about the Seau signing in particular, but it seems to echo McGinnis, the system alone isn't enough, you need players' comments. Do you think the Pats have been drinking their own In Bill We Trust Kool-Aid, and are they in danger of being humbled by teams who are more willing to spend for talent?
Well, it'll stop being arrogance when they stop winning.
Right.
Right.
I think there is some question of that with a theory that we can plug anybody in and he'll perform in our system.
And we did read that story, by the way, the Len Pasquarelli story.
And,
that was interesting.
Can I give you an example there, Fred?
Yeah.
There was a guy by the name of Jerry Jones who had a lot of arrogance and said anybody could coach his football team. Well, at first it looked like he was right. When's the last time they won a playoff game?
Well,
so, you know, when you're winning, the arrogance is okay, but it's when you start losing that all of a sudden you don't have that arrogance
well,
anymore.
Coaching in football is the most important place to have a good, you know, football is the
especially
most
important. Especially today, in today's football.
Absolutely. Dave DiNunzio from Rocky Hill, Connecticut. I see Scott Shanley was just acquired by the Saints. Is there anything else they can do to solidify the linebacker position, meaning the Patriots? Also, why couldn't they get a little more for Gorn? I thought that you could at least get a fifth-round pick for him because he is a borderline starter.
Well, all I'm thinking is Oliver Hoyt might have a shot.
I think the fact that they got a draft pick for both of those guys, I think, is very impressive. I don't think that either one of them is worth more than that.
I agree.
What round did they take Brandon Gorn in?
Paul, he wasn't in a round.
They didn't draft him.
Oh, they didn't draft him? He fell for it. I don't know.
I mean, I just don't... You know,
it wasn't high.
And I know that that's not the be-all, end-all, because there's plenty of guys that were drafted low or drafted not at all, Tom Brady being at the top of the list. You know, and obviously you would give up plenty for a guy like that. But I just think Brandon Gorin is... never been a full-time starter. He's always been an injury replacement.
And God knows he's had his chance.
Very replacement.
He's always been an injury replacement when he started. And, you know, he's basically been there.
He's
been out
of injuries,
on the field.
He's had plenty of opportunities.
I think a sixth-round pick is plenty for him.
And they clearly tried to solidify linebacker with Seau. I mean, how many linebackers are you really looking to bring in late and all of a sudden expect to contribute?
This is about it.
We're going to remake the whole linebacking core a week and a half before the season starts, 2 weeks, whatever we got left?
Let's see. Sean McLaughlin, who is one of our loyal listeners. No, I didn't delete his email. It says, I understand the second hour is the PFW Feed Your Family hour. I'm always willing to contribute to help feed a family for another athlete. I just think we won't see Dion till week 10, and we move on. I would rather have him on the team, but if not, move on. Other thoughts. One Willie McNugget. Willie, you had a couple good, not great years, and were a key part in a couple Super Bowls, but there were some years, especially in the Tickle Me Pete era, that we saw you more in street clothes and worrying about Terry Glenn at your shindigs than worrying about tackling Curtis Martin and Doug Flutie. Way to show your true colors, Willie. Two, Chad.
It is what it is.
Chad Jackson, is he the next coming of Terry Glenn or Vincent Brisby? Glenn missed one game in 96 with a hamstring, while Vincent Brisby missed 10 weeks with a hamstring. And three, do you guys feel that another wide receiver will be added before the Buffalo game? My guess, there will be one, and that guy will be Kevin Johnson, who was coming off an injury and will be super cheap.
Oh, he stinks.
I thought he was pretty good. He's had
12 years ago. He wasn't bad.
Oh, Fred, listen. Seriously. This guy's been on like six teams in the last 3 years.
He was good when he was with the Browns.
When was that?
All right.
Fred, I'm just saying, my point is, I would rather take a guy like Bam Childress and throw him out there than a retread like that.
Four, are you guys more sold on Castle this week as this year's number two, or is Vinny from Long Island still in the Belichick Rolodex?
Well, I think that's over with, don't you? That's Castle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do feel a little bit better. I think he looked a little bit better. I mean, not going to say I feel like he's going to go on a 5-game winning streak if he has to play for a month of football, but you got to feel a little
bit better.
All
right, how long ago did Kevin Johnson play, Paul?
I don't know. I couldn't find him in a media guide.
He just showed me Kelvin.
I just happened to be flipping through the Jacksonville guy because I thought that's where he was last year to open camp, and evidently he wasn't. But I saw Kelvin Kite's bio.
I think you got Detroit.
Okay.
What round did the Patriots draft Ronnie Harrison in?
First?
One emailer says that Jonathan Sullivan just doesn't have the respect for the game that all good players need to have.
Okay.
Andy's...
I've come to the conclusion he's just not that good, by the way.
Let's see. Nick and San Diego. Isn't signing Asante now worth not going through the headache of Deion Gate again? I know it's not the same because Asante is playing out his contract without complaint, but with the lack of quality DBs in the league, having a guy who at worst is the best number two cornerback in the league locked down seems like a good thing. Even the Herald is jumping on the bandwagon by jinxing his interception streak. Even if we brought in talent, which is nice in theory, but from where, they wouldn't have Asante's grasp of the system. So he's thinking it's right now they should be re-signing or extending.
I would certainly
Samuel.
Not be opposed to signing an extension with him. I think he's a proven commodity, and we've talked about that a lot, that he may never evolve into a number one or an elite guy or anything. But he's proven he's certainly a capable NFL starter, number 2/3 corner. It's all about the money, though. It's with them. It's the value. I don't even know who his agent is.
You've got to go back to 2001 since he's really had a very good season. Kevin Johnson, by the way. He had 84 catches for 1,097 yards in 2001, 9 touchdowns. Excellent year. He's had some decent years, 67 catches, 58 catches, only 35 in 2004. Didn't have that many last year because
he's had a lot of injuries lately.
He was on a bunch of teams, but he played 16 games when he only had that 35.
One of my guys, Fred, he's from Syracuse. I really like him. I just think he's at the end of his career and he's not really going to help the team any. You might as well try one of the young guys.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this edition of PFW in Progress. We'll check you out next Wednesday. We'll have a lot more to talk about, and hopefully Deion Branch coming back.
The update done by 5.
A